ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Wednesday evening, the 8th of April, 2026. I'm in a pretty good mood. I don't know about you. The so-called ceasefire has changed the landscape, changed the board just a little bit. How much it's actually changed, we'll get into here today. Obviously, at the very tail end of yesterday's broadcast, the news came in that Donald Trump, His Majesty Donald Trump, Master of Death, decided to stay his merciful hand, to stay his wrath, and to grant the people of Iran continued existence. So all hail, the glorious Master of Death, Donald J. Trump, which is good, which is a good thing. I'm happy about this. I'm very happy that we didn't, quote unquote, eradicate a civilization never to recover yesterday. I'm very glad that Trump didn't go through with his utterly insane threat to annihilate an entire people group. So I'm happy about that. I also don't really believe any of it. I don't really trust any of what has come out. We'll get into it. I'll explain why. I also thought we'd take this time, this so-called ceasefire, this brief and perhaps at this point non-existent pause in the combat, to go back over the history of the Iran war, the long 39-day roller coaster ride that America and the world has been on. And I want to present that to you today. I'll probably do that in the third hour of today's show, because it's probably going to take an hour to go through because I got a lot of videos just day by day showing you that we've been right the entire time, and that really what comes across when you look at the timeline from like a week before the attacks began on February 28th, starting around February 21st and moving forward, or going back farther, like what you see is that there has been absolutely no overarching plan. This entire debacle, this entire 39-day stretch of the war in Iran has been a series of attempted moves that completely flounder, totally fall flat, and then they change tactics to a different move. So the idea now being put forward that this was a great victory for Donald Trump and Iran buckled and, you know, succumbed to his ultimatum, it's just flagrantly untrue and has not been true any of the times they've kind of made this claim. And it really has been a Groundhog's Day repeat over and over and over of kind of the same thing. Trump saying he's going to kill everybody, then backing off a little bit. It's not actually all that complicated. But we will get into just the shifting goals of the war in Iran, the shifting methods by which to achieve that goal. Because really, again, I think if you look at it as we do, just taking the facts on the ground and being extremely skeptical, I guess I could say, of the official story, it's pretty obvious what is actually happening here. You know, things like trying to get the Kurds involved. It was not something that they had planned on doing beforehand. If you wanted to have the Kurds as your main fighting force on the ground, you would have made sure to establish that before you had to rely on them. They only asked the Kurds to get involved days after the initial strikes because the initial strikes didn't work. And so then they're scrambling and they try to get the Kurds and they say the Kurds are going to be our ground force. And the Kurds say, F you, we did that to you last time and you abandoned us. We're not doing that. So they say, well, we don't need the Kurds. Screw the Kurds. The Kurds stole our guns. And then they move on to the next attempt. And what comes across, the impossible to avoid conclusion of all of this, is that Donald Trump has been flying by the seat of his pants, trying to project an air of control in what is in reality a completely chaotic mess of a war that was all started and then perpetuated at every step by our enemies in Israel, who we call our greatest allies. Every step of the way, from the buildup to the war in Iran, to the protest there in the beginning, convincing Trump to do it in the first place, to systematically eliminating any possibility for off-ramps that we had for this entire process. And even now, it looks like they are screwing up this ceasefire because they don't like it. We're America. We shouldn't care what Israel likes. And that's sort of the whole problem, isn't it? We'll be right back.
What's this? Oh, I've got power plant. Oh, what's this? I've got methyl drive. The two ingredients in the power drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Wednesday, the 8th of April, 2026. I'll be joined in the next segment, actually, by Paul Danz. He is running to replace Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. And boy, does he have our endorsement. Really, almost anybody would. To be honest, you know, I would endorse a doorknob for Lindsey Graham. But luckily, we're not in that position. We actually have a very solid, good, you know, candidate who can actually win the election and is just not Lindsey Graham. But he's not Lindsey Graham. He's not Lindsey Graham. And on his own, he's a great candidate. So very excited to talk to him and get into his view of everything going on. Of course, last night, towards the end of the show, the so-called ceasefire came in. And if you were watching, you saw my reaction. That was kind of like, I don't know. I don't think this is real. I don't think this is actually happening. And it basically didn't. It basically hasn't happened at all. And again, this was obvious from the moment that they announced it, because even in Trump's announcement about not following through with his genocidal threat to eradicate a civilization forever if they don't open the Strait of Hormuz, even in his announcement, it was like the Strait of Hormuz is still not open, and they agreed to a 10-point plan that is just everything Iran wants. And they didn't agree to the 10-point plan outright, but they agreed to it as a basis for negotiation, which means what actually happened is that Iran called Trump's bluff, and then Trump came up with an excuse to say otherwise. That's really what happened here. Again, this is not my bias speaking. Okay, I could do cover this in a way that is, you know, more, you know, lopsided one way or the other. I'm just telling you the facts. The facts are that Donald Trump told Iran, I will bomb you back to the Stone Age if you don't open the Strait of Hormuz. Iran did not open the Strait of Hormuz. And then Trump said, Iran capitulated. We're not doing the attack. But they didn't capitulate. The Strait of Hormuz is, at this moment, closed. And when it does reopen, perhaps in 2 weeks, perhaps longer, they'll be charging $2 million tolls for every ship going through the strait, something that they didn't do 30 or 40 days ago before the war started. So as far as I can tell, it's not that Iran won the war necessarily. It's that the war is not over. And the ceasefire doesn't really exist. It was just a face-saving public relations announcement by Trump that means nothing, has changed nothing on the battlefield, but did allow him to declare victory despite the fact that he did chicken out. And again, this is another thing that people are like, yo, you're just mad that Trump didn't bomb Iran. You think that I'm mad that the thing I didn't want to happen didn't happen? That doesn't make any sense. I'm glad that Iran wasn't bombed. I'm still mad at the entire situation overall. I'm still mad that we're still in war with Iran. I'm mad that Israel is bombing the hell out of Lebanon. I'm mad that Trump is governing like an insane idiot and embarrassing all of us and threatening people with destruction. It's all bad. So I could spend the whole show today just like waging, you know, proxy war on X, trying to debate the Benny Johnsons of the world who are telling us this was a fantastic victory and everybody who was upset at the Iran war is a panickin who should never be trusted. I'm not going to do that, obviously. That's what X is for. But I will present some metaphors. How about I present a few metaphors? And as a father, I always find myself just thinking about my relationship with the government, kind of like my relationship with my children, since ostensibly we are in charge of our government. It is ours. And in that case, I've had people say to me, why aren't you celebrating the fact that there's a ceasefire? Okay, one, it's not really a ceasefire. It doesn't really exist. Two, let's say my five-year-old son walks into my living room dragging the garden hose and starts spraying the garden hose all over the living room. Now, at a certain point, I may be able to negotiate with him and get him to stop doing that. I don't then celebrate the fact that he stopped, right? Everything is still wet. It's still bad. This still wasn't something that he should have done. I'm happy he's not spraying the water still, but I don't then celebrate. Great job turning off that water, kid. You did it. Go get some ice cream. Like, no, it's still a problem. We still have a mess to clean up. Actually, this was literally an ex conversation I had, and I can't remember what the guy's response was, but this basically is the metaphor. It's like, oh yeah, no, the guy's like, well, but what if your living room was really dirty beforehand and he brought in the hose to clean it up? And it's like, yeah, that's a great point, man. It's like the living room was messy and now it's still messy, but also flooded. That's essentially the situation that we're in. Iran is still a threat. Iran is still there. It still has its uranium. It's still blocking the Strait of Hormuz. It still has not just everything it did have before the war started. It has more than it had before the war started. This is not a cause for celebration. Again, I'm relieved. I'm happy. I'm very, very gratified that President Trump decided not to eradicate a civilization. Thank you, glorious God of death, Donald Trump, for staying your wrath and showing mercy to us mere mortals. But it's still a bad thing. The other, a metaphor I can draw for you that shows just how absurd this argumentation that you're seeing on Twitter is. Again, I have people saying you're just mad that Trump didn't attack. Because I was saying how bad it would be for Trump to attack. I was saying this would be horrible. This would be devastating, genocidal. And then when it didn't happen, people think I'm mad about it. Like I got my ego hurt. I'm like, dang it. I wish he did attack. Then I'd be right. I said, I didn't know if he was. Actually, I said at the beginning of the show yesterday, before anything had happened, I said, I think he's probably going to back down. I don't think he's going to actually attack. I think he's going to come up with an excuse, which is exactly what happened. So I was right after all. It's like I've been right about this the entire time. You can go back and watch the shows for yourself. It's a beautiful thing about the internet. Go watch my show from the day before we attacked Iran. I got things right that people to this day still haven't figured out. I did it before we even launched the attack. It's fine. It's not about that. It's about the absurdity of these arguments. It's about how you have absolutely nothing to actually go on. And so you come up with these insane claims like you're just mad Trump didn't attack Iran because it proves that you were wrong. Like, again, to take my kids as a metaphor, it'd be like if I looked up one day and I see my five-year-old son pointing a loaded handgun at my three-year-old daughter, but there's an apple on her head and he's like aiming to shoot the apple. And I'm like, no, no, don't do it. And then he fires and hits the apple off her head. And he's like, see, what were you so worried about, you panickin? It's like, okay, that could have gone really bad and I'm still angry. And then it'd be like coming to me, still angry. My son is firing bullets at his sister. And saying to me, you're just mad that he didn't shoot his sister. You were so sure. You thought you were so smart. You thought for sure he was going to accidentally shoot his sister in the head. But he didn't. And that makes you mad. Like, okay. All right. Fine. If that's what you want to believe, more power to you. Operation Epic Failure. 13,000 Iranian targets struck. 155 Iranian ships destroyed. 90% of Iran's weapon factory stuck. Struck 80% of Iran's nuclear industrial base struck 0% of military goals achieved. Well done. Thousands killed. Zero change in geopolitics. I mean, there have been changes. It's just all negative for us. I'll lay it out for you. We'll get into all of it. Let's go back in time and begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch, shall we? All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Wednesday, the 8th of April, 2026. U.S., Iran, and Israel agree to ceasefire. The United States and Iran reached an 11th-hour ceasefire deal on Tuesday evening, hours after President Trump threatened to start wiping out Iran's, quote, whole civilization if it did not allow commercial shipping to pass safely through the Strait of Hormuz. Mr. Trump announced the agreement in a post on social media hours after Pakistan, a mediator in the dispute, urged him to stand down from the 8 p.m. Eastern time deadline he'd set for Iran to accede to his demands. Pakistan proposed that each side observe a two-week ceasefire, and during that time, Iran allow oil, gas, and other vessels to proceed unmolested through the economically vital waterway. Shortly after the ceasefire agreement, a U.S. official said American military strikes against Iran had stopped. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, said in a statement that the Iranians would cease their defensive operation and that for a period of 2 weeks, safe passage to the Strait of Hormuz will be possible if coordinated with Iran's military. That has all changed. This article is from about 2 hours ago, and it's entirely different now. The Strait of Hormuz is closed as response to Israel not just continuing to bomb at Lebanon, but actually bombing Lebanon to the biggest degree that they ever have before. We'll get into all of it. And I'll read you the 10-point plan here in just a second that we apparently agreed to, but now we're saying we never agreed to it because it was always just the thing used as an excuse to say, oh, look, we're having a ceasefire. Actually, I totally didn't bluff and get called on it. They gave up. They wanted a ceasefire because they're so scared of us. Like, yeah, right. U.S. Israel insist Iran ceasefire does not apply to Lebanon, which suffers huge airstrikes. Israel has made clear it doesn't see the newly declared U.S.-Iran ceasefire as applying to its war in Lebanon, where it is still trying to destroy Hezbollah. The White House, too, has made its stance clear that it doesn't apply, but President Trump has stated his intent to take care of a Lebanon ceasefire separately. But this is the thing. It's not actually up to them. It's up to Iran. If they want the ceasefire, then they have to accede to Iran's demands. Iran is the one making demands right now because we are the ones who want something from them that they're not giving us. So if we want the Strait of Hormuz to be open, we have to stop Israel from bombing Lebanon. Again, I'll show you videos from Joe Kent as he has issued a video following this so-called ceasefire, reiterating what he said in his resignation letter, that we have to decouple, we have to restrain Israel. Now might be the time, and it might come about as a necessity, because literally we want to stop the war. Apparently Trump wants to start the war. J.D. Vance wants to stop the war. And we can't as long as Israel is still bombing Lebanon. So we're almost being forced to have to try to restrain or use leverage against Israel in one way or another. We'll see how that goes. Mystery surrounds death of ninth scientist tied to U.S. secrets as disturbing pattern grows. This is from Daily Mail. As another scientist with ties to America's space program has now joined the growing list of deaths and disappearances around the U.S., Michael David Hicks, a research scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, passed away on July 30th, 2023 at the age of 59, but the cause of death was never made public and no record of an autopsy being performed could be found. This, of course, is just the ninth in a long series of mysterious deaths and disappearances of energy, space flight, and national security related scientists here in America. Finally, we have this. Forget 65. America's new retirement age is 85, or 35 if you're lucky. Now, interesting about this is that the average age of death in America is 79. So the average retirement age is now a full 6 years older than the average age of death, meaning that most people simply work until they die here in America, here in the greatest country the world has ever seen, the greatest empire, the wealthiest, most prosperous nation ever on earth in history by a factor of 10, our people are working until they die. They're working until they're 85. They work from ostensibly 18 to 85, and they never get to relax, never get to truly disconnect and enjoy your life. We actually had a pretty good setup a little while ago. Go back in time about 50, 60 years. everything kind of made a hell of a lot of sense, right? You could get a job. You didn't even have to. Yeah, and Ben Shapiro's thrilled about this. You should never stop working. Of course, that's easy for him to say, probably him and all of his family and friends. You should be working till you're 85, he says, sitting in an air-conditioned room at a desk saying lies. When your job is to sit in front of camera and lie for Israel, it's not actually that hard for you to keep working until you're 85. Tell that to literally anybody else that has to actually work for a living. So very easy for Ben Shapiro and others like him to say. But for the average person, I think we'd prefer to go back to the way it was before, where you got out of high school, you could get a job at a factory in town, you could work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and afford two cars, your own house, your wife staying at home to raise the kids, and you retired at 65 and spent 15, 20 years just enjoying yourself. That was a life that has been stolen from us, that has been deliberately ripped away from us and replaced with just nothing but negative. It's not like, you know, we discovered a better way of doing things, and so we chose to do things differently. We were forced by necessity into a much less meaningful or fulfilling or appropriate way of living. And of course, we could all probably retire at 30 if we stopped giving money to everybody who hates us. We stopped letting ourselves be robbed to the nth degree by a bunch of government programs to simply redistribute our wealth to genocidal maniacs in the Middle East or newly arrived con men from Somalia here in America. If we could manage to actually benefit from our incredible prosperity, we wouldn't have to look with envy at the incredible architectural creations in China or Abu Dhabi. We could have them here. We wouldn't have to, you know, wonder if it's safe sending our kids to elementary school. We wouldn't have to, you know, avoid certain parts of town because the police don't go there. We could have everything. We could be living in paradise, but we've allowed ourselves to be taken over by a bunch of rapacious parasites who would rather drink our blood. Now, let's get into what exactly happened with Iran yesterday. Again, I think looking at this just with a bird's eye view and in an unbiased sort of way, kind of obvious from the beginning, but now, a couple, you know, 24 hours later, we can look back and say with certainty that, yeah, basically, and we'll go through this because I'm going to be joined by Paul Danz in the next segment. I think I'm going to have Lebanon John call in, talk about what's going on in Lebanon in the second hour. We'll spend 30 minutes or so with him. And then I want to get into the timeline of the Iran war, just going back to the week before February 28th, the buildup and how this has unfolded. And one of the patterns that you see emerge is that clearly Iran and America try to do, or I'm sorry, Israel and America try to do something, you know, spectacular. Then it fails. Then Donald Trump comes out with an ultimatum and says, you have 48 hours or we're going to kill everybody. And then those 48 hours go by and Donald Trump comes out and says, it's fine. I don't need to do my threat. I don't need to go through with it because we totally have a ceasefire and an agreement. And then Iran comes out and says, we do not have a ceasefire or an agreement. And then we just go back into this cycle. And then they come up with a new thing. So it's like they tried to get the Kurds involved. Kurds not involved. Oh, ultimatum. We'll destroy all your electricity if you don't do something right now. And then 48 hours later, it kind of falls to the side. I think this is what we've been witnessing ever since last Friday. I don't think there was ever a lost pilot. I think we tried in sort of a last-ditch effort. Because all Trump is looking for and all he's been looking for since about 48 hours after this war started, the entire everything Trump has been doing and everything America's been doing has been focused on getting a win, just getting one win. If we could just get the uranium, then we could declare victory. If we could just find somebody in the Iranian leadership that we could claim, oh, he's the friendly guy that we put in charge now. So we did it. We regime change. A good regime's in place now. We'll back off. Like they just want something that they can hold up as a trophy to say, see, this is what it was all about. And now we're done. That last Friday was the uranium in the Isfahan nuclear plant. I think that the C-130s and the fighter jets and the Black Hawk helicopters, I think that was an attempt to extract the uranium. That was their big, like, dramatic thing that they, if that had succeeded, then the war would probably be over right now. They'd be able to say, we did it. We got the uranium. That was the victory condition. We've won. Now we can back off. It didn't work, obviously. It did not succeed. So they came up with a story about a, you know, lost pilot and told everybody it was an amazing, you know, Hollywood-esque rescue mission. And then immediately after that, he issues the 48-hour ultimatum, just like he did the other times that their grand, dramatic, you know, frantic attempt to rescue this disaster fails. Then he issues an ultimatum, and it sort of resets the news cycle. I mean, he has done this over and over again. And if you can't see the pattern, then you're just not looking for it. I'll get more into that full breakdown later. I want to go to clip number 11 now. This is Joe Kent, who released a video following the ceasefire deal about what has to come next, what the next step for America is if we want lasting peace in the region. Let's watch.
Great news this evening that there's been a two-week ceasefire agreed upon tentatively between us and the Iranians. It's unconfirmed yet if the Iranians have accepted this deal as well, but I hope that they have. It's absolutely essential that we ensure that the Israelis do not sabotage this two-week ceasefire or eventually the lasting peace that we're trying to achieve with the Iranians. We're on the cusp of being able to have the Strait of Hormuz reopened to hopefully start to get the world energy supply and commerce back online. The last thing we need is the Israelis doing what they have done in past negotiations and targeting the negotiators or taking a series of strikes that escalates the conflict. In order to ensure that we can restrain the Israelis, we actually have to start removing features of the military support that we give to them. We have to take away enough from them that they simply cannot go on the offense, that they're using all their military capabilities that we provide for them and that they have organically for the defense of their country and not for offensive operations inside of Iran. It's absolutely critical that we take this step and don't just take Israel's word for it, that they agree to this ceasefire simply because they have a very bad track record of adhering to these deals. We also have to keep in mind that Israel has a different strategic outcome than we do. Us working towards any kind of a deal with the Iranian government works against the Israeli strategic objectives of toppling this government completely and totally. We have to recognize that in order to properly address Israel, because Israel could spoil any peace that President Trump is working to achieve. So we have to keep that in mind. It's very good news we took this ceasefire. We have to understand that there is no military solution to the conflict right now. Basically, every action militarily that we've taken has only strengthened the regime, and it's done a lot to destabilize the entire region and to take away the security and safety of the free commerce of all of the energy and oil and natural gas that flows out of the region through the Strait of Hormuz. So we have to keep our main objective in mind. It's getting that lasting peace, and we will be the more powerful nation for providing that lasting peace and stability. We will not gain a more powerful position by continuing to escalate the conflict or continuing to strike Iran. In order for us to achieve this goal that we have of bringing about a lasting peace, keeping the Strait of Hormuz open, we have to restrain the Israelis. We have to keep that in mind. So I continue to pray for peace, pray for President Trump, pray for him to have clarity, pray for successful peace negotiations, pray for our men and women downrange in harm's way. Thank you. God bless.
So there's Joe Kent again laying out there is no military solution to this intractable problem. J.D. Vance has issued a statement on this. We'll go to that in the next hour. But Paul Danz joins me in about 4 minutes after this commercial break. Share this link. You're not going to want to miss this. This is the man who will defeat Lindsey Graham. Stay with us.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it. I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate-level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, And sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where they put it in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvisshowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvisshowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvisshowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvisshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be joined by my guest, Paul Danz. He's an accomplished attorney, former Trump administration official, and the driving force behind Project 2025. He's now running for U.S. Senate in South Carolina to unseat Lindsey Graham. You can follow Paul Danz on X at Danz for Senate, pauldanz.com. He's also on Facebook, Paul Danz for U.S. Senate. That's his YouTube channel as well. And he's on Truth at Paul Danz for U.S. Senate, all spelled out. Mr. Danz, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Harrison. Great to be with you.
Well, the pleasure is mine. And, of course, you are running in probably one of the most important races in America right now. Just let's start off with the pitch. Why choose you over, beloved patriot Lindsey Graham?
Let's stop World War III. Let's get this Senate seat, rip it out of the hands of the deep state and put it back in the hands of the people. Look, I'm a guy who I'm a pure-blooded deplorable, if you will. One of the many of us who came from the working class stock and when, my family went off and fought these wars only to see us degraded, that the whole globalization. I'm fighting to get America back, to make South Carolina first again, get it out of the hands of this globalist warmonger, this childless weirdo, and really start building for a 21st century healthy South Carolina.
Well, and I hope the sarcasm came across, because it's hard to believe that somebody like Lindsey Graham actually represents the great state of South Carolina. How has Lindsey Graham maintained such a position in the U.S. Senate? How has he retained his seat for so long when he seems to be on the wrong side of just about every topic from the point of view of a Republican, you know, conservative like myself? How has he managed to retain hold on this seat, and how do you plan to break that hold?
Right. He is the uniparty senator from Ukraine, maybe slash Israel. Yeah. I'm running to be the Republican senator from South Carolina. How's he held on to power? Look, the guy's been there 32 years and he is essentially blackmailed. I think that at the end of the day, many of the people in Washington are corrupted, and this is maybe the worst of them. But, there's a basically.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit there. Sorry, we lost your Zoom. Crew, if you can tell me if we're reconnected, make sure we have him on so I can ask him next. All right, yeah, we lost you there for just a second. But yeah, he's had this stranglehold. And I don't want to spend too much time on the Iran war. I want to get to your domestic policies, but obviously Lindsey Graham is a major war hawk. That's what a lot of people like myself don't like about him, amongst other things. But that's, you know, one of the primary objections we have. What is your opinion on the Iran war, the direction that it's going, and importantly, Lindsey Graham's, you know, encouragement of this and, you know, cheering for this for his entire career?
Well, I was never a fan of this war. I did not vote for Mark Levin to be president of the United States. I believe this entire thing was engendered by bad people around President Trump. Look, we elected him to be the commander-in-chief. And the reality is that we have major battles here to fight at home. I mean, China, the more we stretch ourselves out around the world, the more susceptible we come here at home. And, you know, that's really the case. Look at the farmland, for example. There's 44,000 acres in South Carolina owned beneficially by the communist Chinese. So let's focus on home and let's stop running around with these endless foreign wars. That's certainly why we put Donald Trump back in for 4 more years.
Well, that's exactly right. And that explains a lot of the disappointment and feeling of betrayal that a lot of us on the MAGA side of things feel. And Lindsey Graham has been, you know, a big part of that. And again, it's like, it's not even that I care that much about what's going on in the Middle East. It's that I see us focusing on that while at home. The story today, America's new retirement age is 85, even though the average age of death in America is 79. How is our retirement age 6 years older than our average age of death? It means we're working people to death. I mean, how do we solve these problems? How do we solve these intractable, long-running societal ills that are going totally unaddressed by the current slate of Republicans?
Yeah, that's right. When Lindsey Graham went to Washington, the debt was $5 trillion. Now it's $39 trillion. These endless wars, we plundered all of our riches, the ability to have actually a great life here at home and people retiring on time. We have to grow the economy, but we have to build back by investing in ourselves. No more $300 billion to Ukraine and another $50 billion. No, we're going to put it back to work here at home in the public schools, building the roads back in South Carolina, giving our kids a shot at this 21st century economy after AI, tech schools. I want shop class back in every middle school in South Carolina. They don't even teach kids to work with their hands anymore. So we're going to build the next generation of electricians, of advanced robotic technicians. We're going to do that in a way that gives people a chance of the future. And we're also going to really build a 21st century agricultural economy in South Carolina. That's going to be done. I'm proposing a 21st century homesteading act to put our next generation back on the land.
That's a very interesting idea. I'd like to hear more about that. But overall, how do you think we can get this done? Because myself, I'm one of them. I know a lot of people out there have been so disappointed by Trump and so disappointed by the current class of Republicans. You can blame everything on Trump, but I mean, the Republicans are right there. They haven't passed anything that we want them to pass. They've not done the SAVE Act. I mean, they haven't achieved anything for us. And so a lot of people are looking around and going, I'm not going to vote for the Republicans anymore. They keep lying to me. Now, I've said, you know, I think the right person comes along, I'm happy to vote Republican, but I understand people feeling betrayed at this point. What do you say to people who think that voting is no longer even a viable option for saving this country?
Well, I'm here to break the system. This is the only way we can do it right now in the current constructs of Republican and Democrat. But I'm not your country club of Republican. I'm a guy who's America first and found his way believing in Trump that he was going to do these things. But we have to go for the next generation of fighter, and I'm a proven one. Look, we can do it. Look, everyone listening to this, you got to support people like me out here fighting. So you can go to pauldance.com. But the most important thing is the youth have to vote. Right. I'm standing up for this next generation, and people are saying, well, they don't vote, but they can vote right now. And that's the important thing. June 9th, Lindsey Graham is in major trouble. This is a jungle primary, and the top two people will advance. So he is at 41%, and there's all likelihood going to be a runoff. But right now, it's important that we get the messaging out there. Look, I'm here to really break the system and put us back in control of the U.S. Senate.
That's absolutely what we need, because even if Republicans win, the American people need representation that right now is totally lacking. So June 9th is the primary day. How can people contribute to you? How can people vote early? Like, for people in South Carolina that want to vote for you, or people around the country that want to see Lindsey Graham kicked out on his butt, how can they help, and how can they vote for you?
Yeah, well, look, it's pauldans.com. You can follow us at Dans for Senate. But what I'm really proposing is to break the system. Like, we got to bring the Sacklers in for justice, the opioid crisis. I want to string up, Fauci. He's a criminal. And this is what I'm going to go after. So this is not just for South Carolina. This is for all the patriots across the land. So all hands have to be on deck to get this done. But we're in a position now where we can win this. There are 62 days to this election. And, you know, go and donate. Chip in $20. This is an investment in your future. You're already paying for it at the gas pump every time you fill up now. It's another $20-$35. Chip in $20 for my campaign. We're going to take Lindsey out. We're going to focus on our country once again.
Absolutely. And again, you know, there's a lot of good people running around the country right now, but not all of them have your experience and your expertise, your wealth of knowledge and cursus honorum, right? The path you've taken to get here is very impressive. And just to let people know, you were a graduate of MIT with degrees in economics and city planning. You went to the University of Virginia School of Law, built a successful commercial litigation practice in New York City. Sounds like you're doing pretty well for yourself. You really want to give all that up to go hang out with the weirdos in D.C., Paul?
Well, I gave it up actually 10 years ago. Look, this is about survival of our republic. There's been a white genocide, okay? Yeah. There has been a systematic ability to not only take down our republic from without, you know, the borders, but also within. The Chinese communists have come in, bought our land. Meanwhile, people are being poisoned. So I'm going to stop this. I'm going to be the guy who gets us the answers in Washington, who puts these people on the hot seat. But more than that, puts money back in the pockets of American families. I'm a dad of five. And I have a stake in the future. No more of this fake and gay stuff, you know, to have a weirdo wandering around Disney World and calling for nuclear annihilation in Iran. This is just absurd. So we have to start back with putting people who are living family value lives. And that's what I struggle. I struggle and I live up to every day as you know, a Christian believer, but who is someone who benefited greatly from all the shared sacrifice of 250 years of generations. This is the point where patriots have to stand up. So I'm asking the folks out there, go to pauldans.com, get behind our campaign, but get the word out too. This is an information war. It's a catchy title. We can't trust what's coming out of Washington right now. But when you get Paul Dans in the Senate, you will get to the bottom of this stuff. I'm going to release the Kennedy papers, the last 10,000 docs. I'm going to get to the bottom of the UAPs. I'm going to get you Fauci on the silver platter, because this is what we have to do. Otherwise, this whole country is crumbling. And it's gone on too long. This is really the 11th hour.
It really is. And when you bring up people like Fauci, or I would throw in anybody in the Russiagate collusion, it's like we've got a backlog of justice to achieve, justice to dispense. And every day it seems like we're adding more names. It's like we got a lot of work ahead of us. And all of this is is very serious, but if we can just take a moment, you brought it up. What was he doing at Disney World? Do you have any idea? I mean, you got any sources? What the heck Lindsey Graham's doing? Lone man, no children, wandering around Disney World with a fairy wand. I mean, what's he up to, Paul?
I'm a dad of five. I have four daughters. You know, my eldest is 12. They've actually outgrown their Disney princess phase. So when this is the U.S. Center, it's in your face, I think. I mean, Alex and you all would probably have better theories about what's going on. But at this point, he's untouchable. To do something like that is just kind of showing that there's impunity. Look, they're kind of, you know, out there celebrating a globalist touchdown. And what do you do when you've cooked up another endless war in the Middle East? You go and celebrate at Disney World.
It's his Super Bowl.
I mean, look, it is the neocon Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But you know, thank God that there's people, you know, like Alex, like Tucker, this entire kind of right thinking right that is beginning to stand up and say, no mas, we're not doing this anymore. And, yeah. You know, for those of us on the ground, I've committed to, one of President Trump's killers in the first term. That's where I got to where I was because I used my MIT problem solving with my Virginia law acumen and just kind of this hard headed, uncuckable, right? Is the phrase. Like, I do not bend and I stick with the principles. And that's what Project 2025 was intended to be. It was a plan to make sure the next time we got power, we were ready to use it and basically getting the entire conservative right to ready roll day one. And I think President Trump has used it, but the reality is there's bad people who make their way into the system and the Patriots are outnumbered right now on the field.
Absolutely.
Particularly the U.S. Senate.
Yep. And again, it's like, you know, sure, they do some things that maybe aren't for American interests. I wouldn't care that much if things were great here at home. If we were, you know, living large and not having to work, sure, go to war overseas. What is it? You know, go kidnap the president of Venezuela. Sounds fun. But it's like we've got these massive existential problems here that are going totally unaddressed. Project 2025 was a really brilliant blueprint for saving this country. That was actually going to be my next question. How would you grade, the Trump administration's second term on how they've employed 2025? What do you think it's going to take to get us back on track?
Well, if it was a NASCAR race, I'd say right now they're kind of in the back part of the field. We still have a lot of laps to go, but it's time to get real here. Mm-hmm. Look, I think it was a great plan out of the gate and it gave people directional. I salute President Trump and his team for going the right direction, but it can't just be performative. We have to nail these things down. We've lost a lot of time on the clock, with Pam Bondi and the like. So let's get the orange jumpsuits going. You know, let's actually see some justice. But more than that, you know, look, this is going to snap back twice as hard if we're not serious. The Democrats are coming hard. We know that. I, as a guy who was under the gun there when they had control of the House, it's very difficult to get anything done. So that makes it particularly acute. Look, in South Carolina, we have the worst roads in the country. Our schools are falling apart. And we have a senator who's there committing, wants to go home only to bring boys and girls to go fight on foreign battlefields. That's the only reason he comes back to South Carolina. And, you know, meanwhile, we suffer these indignities. What we see this past Easter, with them shutting out the patriarch from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, these are things we just can't stand for anymore. So there comes a time where you either stand and deliver or you just give up. And we have to fight. This is what our relatives, our ancestors did. We have no other choice.
Absolutely. And again, you see Lindsey Graham make some of these statements that he's made where he said, like, verbatim, he's been like, yeah, I'm going to send South Carolinians to go die for Israel. And it's like, how does anybody fall for this? And clearly it's because he's got the approval of the establishment. He's got the approval of the uniparty. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody, but it's about breaking that and showing that we can break that. And what I don't understand is, as you point out, Democrats are open about what they plan. They plan to arrest people who collaborated with Trump. So what I don't understand is, okay, if you're Lindsey Graham or any of these other rhinos, sure, you might look at Harrison Smith, some dude from Texas, and say, who cares what he thinks? But do they not care about preserving their own life, preserving their own legacy? I mean, do they not understand what the Democrats are planning for them? And how can I make an argument better than just showing a video of Keith Ellison or you know, J.B. Pritzker saying we're throwing them all in prison. It's like, how do they not get the severity of the situation we're in, I guess, is my question.
Well, I think, you know, God bless us, 250 years from now when we still have the American Republic, they're going to use the name Lindsey Graham like they used the name Benedict Arnold. The man is a traitor against this great republic. And you see that J6, this man, this lunatic was walking around telling the Capitol Police they should have shot more J6 protesters in the head. Yeah. That's why they had the guns. This is the first guy to cut bait on Trump and say, you know, I'm out, count me out. So I guess he's planning to skate away from this. And but we've all seen this act one too many times. And that's South Carolina is finally like enough. But, you know, he has managed with the, you know, the trillions that flow through the federal government to get a really hook on a lot of people. And that's why it's really incumbent that we stand up as American patriots, individuals. I'm a strong believer in the Second Amendment. Without that, we don't have the First Amendment. And the First Amendment is what this very show is based on. They tried to pull the plug on Alex. They tried to pull the plug on everybody else. They are going to set themselves on deplatforming us, basically taking, debanking us, taking our free speech away, taking our guns away. This is what's coming, folks. I know they say this is the truth of every next election, but this one is particularly, if we give Lindsey Graham another 6 years in the U.S. Senate, he will lead us off a cliff. And he's just dead set on kinetic war. You know, there's a whole group of them that are kind of committed to, I don't know, rebuilding the Third Temple. Well, look, the Third Temple was rebuilt. It's called Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And, you know, he tore down the temple and rebuilt it in 3 days. And that's my theology. So as far as making this into a religious war, no, the religious war is living good here at home. It's like getting rid of the enemies, the snakes within us, casting them out from the U.S. borders and actually making this the new Jerusalem, the land of milk and honey.
You're exactly right. And of course, you know, the response you'll get to things like that, because I get it too. I've been talking about the red heifer sacrifice and the Third Temple forever because they talk about it. And so the response I get from people online is they go, sure, you're rambling about this crazy temple stuff. It's like, I don't know, Benjamin Netanyahu is saying it. Well, I'm supposed to just ignore it. So it's this weird dichotomy where, because we think it's weird and go, we don't want to be a part of this. I don't want to go to war to start some apocalyptic, you know, like eschatology. I don't know any of this stuff. I don't like it. And it shouldn't be deciding our war agenda. Are you kidding me? And then people turn around and go, wow, you're crazy for thinking that. No, they're the crazy ones for trying to actually start a war over this. And people need to be aware of it and speak out against it. I feel the same way. You mentioned white genocide. Why are people afraid of saying this? Why are people afraid of saying, hey, it's wrong to deliberately eradicate a race? Everybody agrees with this, but we're not allowed to say it because we're white and white people are being targeted. I mean, how do we break through people's own like self-imposed fear of talking about this stuff that's very real?
Well, the phrase is courage begets courage. You know, it takes a few strong men to stand up and people get in line and find and their own sea legs. And that's what I'm doing. You know, it's just intuitive. I grew up on the shoulders of giants, these men in my family. My grandfather was a merchant marine. He sailed in the Murmansk run, probably the deadliest convoy, you know, in those Liberty ships. They were sitting ducks, essentially. But, you know, these were the kind of the role models I came up with. And I'll be damned if I'm going to let this country go down and hand it over to this kind of communist clown, globalist elite. But look, I've been at the top. I've swum with those sharks and I know how to speak their language. I know their game plan. I've fought them at the top levels of corporate law in the Chevron Ecuador case, and they can be beat. That's the bottom line. You know, we have right on our side. We have God on our side, and we actually have the majority of Americans on our side. It's about getting out of your armchair, getting a little bit uncomfortable, saying things that are basically going to say, yeah, you know, he's actually right when he says that. And that's what it's incumbent on all of us to do.
And it really is powerful, isn't it? Because when you look at somebody like Lindsey Graham, or you look at any of these organizations, the ADL, whatever, you know, they'll brag about, we have hundreds of people on our payroll working 24/7 to look after this stuff. And yet, really, if you look at the polls, I mean, today there's a poll for the first time maybe ever, America's views of Israel have gone negative. And this is because we have truth on our side. We don't have all of the money or all of the systems or all of the establishment, you know, levers to pull. But it turns out you don't need anything if you have the truth. The truth alone sort of overpowers all of that stuff, all of the money and all of the endorsements. And the truth really is the secret weapon at the end of the day, isn't it?
Well, Jesus is the truth, the way, and the light. So he will overcome anything. I think that we have to realize that we're in this information war. But again, you know, they do have the high ground right now, but we can take it back. We did that. They had us locked down, counted out basically during COVID, and we fought our way out of it. Yeah. And this is what we've done as a country for 200 years. But you just have to start with what's around you and just kind of build out from there. But it's really incumbent, you know, again, this isn't South Carolina's problem. Lindsey Graham's America's problem. This is a guy who basically rules the roost in the Senate for the Democrats. He is a uniparty elite. He's the reason we don't have the SAVE Act. He's doing all this performative stuff like he's actually for it. They're just completely kind of trying to swindle the kind of Fox News watching crowd that, you know, wants to believe. Look, we all want to believe there's people in Washington working in our best interest, but they're demons out there, folks. And this is a spiritual war. So if you're going to send, I'm putting on the battle. I was given the name Paul and a calling essentially to do this work. And that's why I will be bold and get out there. And I'm asking you to put your faith in me and support us.
Well, I wish I lived in South Carolina and could vote for you. All I can do is endorse you and try to encourage all freedom lovers there in the great state of South Carolina to vote for Paul Dans. You can follow Mr. Dans at Dans for Senate on X, pauldans.com. You can find him on Facebook or YouTube at Paul Dans for U.S. Senate. And he's on Truth at Paul Dans for U.S. Senate. But there he is on X at Dans for Senate. Thank you so much for coming on with us, sir. We'd love to get an update from you prior to the June 9th primary, just to get you over the finish line. And we're watching your race with bated breath, hoping against hope that you can kick out despicable warmonger Lindsey Graham.
It's going to happen. Keep the faith. Great to be with you, Harrison.
Thank you so much. All right, Paul Dans, everybody. Dans for Senate on X, pauldans.com. On Facebook, Paul Dans for U.S. Senate. And again, Lindsey Graham, if there's one swamp creature that we want to, I'll be nice, get out of the swamp. I'll just say we want to get him out of the swamp, is how I'll put it. Lindsey Graham's the guy, and Paul Dans is the man for the hour. Now, when we get back on the other side, we'll be joined by Lebanon John. He has just been in contact with some people from Iran, and we'll get you an on-the-ground report.
Let me do this. The folks at Bigley, about 7-8 months ago, came out with this top-of-the-line Faraday cage backpack with all these special pockets, super high quality. I'd previously bought a bag for myself personally like this, similar brand, for $500. The problem was they only got 500 of these. Well, guess what? They got a couple thousand of them finally in. It took 7-8 months. It's a $600 value, just the bag, for $249. But guess what comes in it? America First Faraday bag, America First Tactical Trench Knife. It's badass. America First T-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense Supplements, Shilajit Gummy, Shilajit Capsules, Irish CMOS Capsules, Warcry Premium product, and more. And VIP members get it for $199. Also, as you can now read in the newspapers, the Texas receiver is saying he's not going to pay the rent or the bills. So you ask, when are we going to shut down? Tomorrow? 2 weeks from now? I'm going to just wait till the lights turn off, okay? You'll probably see InfoWars go down the site. You see streaming shut down. Once we can't do it, we have the All Shows Network built at Bigley Owns, and I'm going to go over and do it there. But I'm going to ride this horse till it dies. I'm going to ride this race car till the engine blows or the wheels come off. Or I crash into the embankment. I ain't giving up. I'm riding this horse till I win or I lose. And then the media's like, oh, he's finally going to lose. Oh, yeah, all right. I am the InfoWar. Our listeners are the InfoWar. And we got a whole line. Here's the first one of limited edition Veterans of the InfoWar t-shirts. Look at this. This is badass. And it's the troops on Iwo Jima raising the American flag with the InfoWars patch where the stars are. InfoWars lives forever. It is an amazing limited edition shirt. Look at that bad boy. And it funds this operation, but also the Alex Jones Network to keep us on the air. We need funds We want to get more reporters back and expand, but we need your support. TheAlishowStore.com.
I guess an entire civilization isn't going to die tonight. More important than that is to all the pro-Israel conservatives out there online right now, rubbing it in people's faces, people like me, that we were wrong and you were right. I want to congratulate you. I'm very happy for you that you get to feel that you were right and we were wrong. How foolish of us. And by the way, you know it because you're clearly smarter. We erroneously thought Trump might do what he said he will do. But because you're smarter, you realize he's not going to do that. You've watched him promise to release the Epstein files and not do that. You've watched him say, we're going to do no more new wars. You didn't do that, so you caught on quicker because you're smarter. So congratulations to you. I'm very happy for you. Now, if you care to understand what our actual concern was, and my guess is you don't, but in case you do, let me share it with you. When President Trump said an entire civilization will die tonight unless... Yeah, some of us thought that might happen because he said that was going to happen. Grateful that didn't happen. Secondarily, there was a concern that is still justified. The concern is this. We're going to end an entire civilization. They're all going to die tonight. Innocent people. That's very immoral. Yes, it's a war crime, all the things. Above man's law is God's law. That is a very immoral thing for anyone to say, even if they don't mean it. Now, just so you can better understand, imagine that you look over, you're at a coffee shop, and you see a man approach a woman. He's hitting on her, and he says something to her like, I'll rape you if you don't go out on a date with me. And you're like, what an incredibly terrible thing. And the guy next to you says, no, don't worry. He doesn't mean he's not actually going to do that. And you watch the lady say, yes, I'll go out on a date with you. You might have the decency to say, yeah, I guess that kind of tyrannical threat, that immoral threat is, it's just the wrong thing to do. If you didn't see it that way and you're like, no, that's actually a dating strategy. I use it myself. If you see it that way, agree to disagree. But in the hopes that I could offer an opportunity to understand our concerns, if you care to understand them, there is that analogy. So with that said, I'm going to close by saying I am not a Trump hater. I really support so much of what that man has done. I so admire what he's been through, the adversity that he's overcome. However, I like to call balls and strikes. If he does things I like, I'm going to say it as such. If he does things that I don't like, I will say it as such. There are three principal things he's done that I don't like. They're massive betrayals. Number one, he protected Epstein criminals, very objectively so. Number two, he started a war with Iran. Number three, you'll disagree, he sold out American interests to Israel. I really don't like President Trump's stances on those, his decisions, his actions. I will call balls and strikes. I see a lot of pro-Israel conservatives now all of a sudden seemingly not willing to call balls and strikes on President Trump. Seemingly 100% of everything he does, you happen to be in agreement with. Now, the odds of that being genuine are very low.
That's exactly right. That's the great J.P. Sears breaking down the absurdity of the argument in the way that only he can. On the other side, Lebanon John joins me with some exclusive information, latest updates to the Middle East.
Coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors, and that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself is InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and you're being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at theallisonstore.com and look at these two new amazing lines.
The globalist agenda hour by hour. This is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Joining me now is my co-host on Moonbase Live, a show that we do occasionally. We should probably do one tonight, John. We probably have enough information to do one soon. You, of course, can follow us at Moonbase Live on X, and we're on Rumble, Moonbase Live. Follow John on X at Lebanon John. He's been providing very thorough updates throughout the conflict between America and Iran, and he calls in today. Oh, I'm sorry, Lebanon underscore John. Lebanon underscore John on X. John, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
It's going all right. You tell me. Obviously, Israel was very mad at the ceasefire yesterday and took that anger out on Lebanon. Biggest bombing raid against Lebanon, killing upwards of 700 civilians, I think was the latest count I saw. What do you have for us about this?
Yes. So, Bibi Netanyahu and the Israeli government in general were not even at the table for this negotiation.
Right.
And so that's basically somewhat of a sign of what's going on, that Israel was not even invited to this negotiation, that Donald Trump's administration negotiated basically with Iran directly. And the Israelis had, like, on their television channels, a countdown for this massive proposed civilization-ending strike that they were going to participate in. And so they were preparing to participate in this massive assault, obviously based on American leadership and the American indication of a massive strike. So they had all their bombers lined up for a very large, sudden assault. Then the announcement of a ceasefire comes, and apparently the Israelis weren't involved in a negotiation at all. The rumors are that Bibi Netanyahu called Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, and basically tells him, you know, what I'm going to guess, and I'm pretty, I have a pretty good instinct on these sort of things. Basically, Bibi Netanyahu tells Trump, this isn't going to work. You know, I'm taking hits domestically in the politics of Israel. All my enemies have come out now and are like, basically, they went to town on Bibi Netanyahu in Israel like crazy. They said, you've humiliated us, you've degraded us. You know, the Iran war was basically our war. In the end, we've achieved nothing, and they didn't even have us at the negotiating table. And then our army's on the verge of collapse. Society's taking a bunch of damage. We've achieved nothing. And, you know, Bibi Netanyahu is a failure. And so after all this made the rounds in the Israeli media, Bibi calls Trump and basically says, I need a win. You know, this isn't going to work. And so then I guess Trump walks back the Lebanese front being part of the ceasefire, where Trump is now claiming, like, you know, that really wasn't part of the deal. You know, somehow, some way, really wasn't part of the deal. When, of course, everybody knows it was part of the deal. And so then what apparently happened is the Israeli assault that they had prepared for Iran, that they were locked and loaded, ready to go, in a sort of tantrum or fit of rage, and also for political expediency of Bibi Netanyahu, they unleashed that assault just on Lebanon instead. Now, they don't have military targets to hit in Lebanon. If they did, they would have already hit them. What would they be waiting for? So if they knew where out in the open, they would have hit him. They would have hit him a long time ago. But nonetheless, they have to take the news headlines away from Bibi Netanyahu's failures and create a different headline that, oh, Lebanon is suffering now because of Iran. Lebanon is suffering now because they dared to resist. And simultaneously, this is a gambit to divorce the front of Iran and Lebanon, because the Lebanese military operations against Israel have been relatively easy, with Iran taking a lot of the burden, with Iran occupying a lot of the defenses and intelligence forces, so that it allows the Lebanese operations to be easier. So actually, since October 7th until now, this last round of fighting has actually been easier for Lebanon, because Israel is preoccupied with the massive war going on with Iran. And so from the Israeli point of view, it would be very expedient if the Iranian front could be halted, at least temporarily, to then allow for all their intelligence and defensive capabilities to be focused only on the Lebanese front. And so it was an attempt to divorce the front. And so then they did a media campaign in Iran to say that your leaders are going to sacrifice your lives and ruin your chance of peace for the sake of a foreign country in Lebanon, to attempt to convince the Iranian people that it's not in their national interest to support Lebanon, that they should accept the ceasefire, leave Lebanon out, to, sell Lebanon out, let Lebanon be focused on and destroyed individually. And so, okay, yeah, so that's basically a pretty good breakdown or rundown of, like, what America and Israel did up until this point. I haven't mentioned, you know, what Lebanon or Iran has decided to do or what their reaction is to this. But does that make sense up until this point?
Yeah, that does. And of course, for our television viewers, you see we've been playing B-roll of the attacks on Lebanon. All of these are from the last 24 hours or so, and you can see it is absolutely massive. Right now we're looking at, I believe that's Tyre or Tyre, and you just see smoke across the entire city, just massive apartment blocks being blown up. I mean, this is indiscriminate terror bombing by Israel on Lebanon for, I guess, the crime of existing, I guess. I don't know. I mean, that's all I got. So what is Iran and Lebanon's response? And you're saying that basically the I guess, pro-peace faction is telling the Iranian people, or just straight up the Israelis are telling the Iranian people, hey, don't be suckers getting your country bombed for Lebanon. Let Lebanon go it alone so that you can, you know, get out of this conflict. But, I mean, it's not really up to Israel or even Lebanon, right? It's Iran. If Iran wants to, you know, include the Lebanese front in the ceasefire, they're the ones proposing it, right? So it's not like we have the ability to dictate terms to them. I mean, that isn't that what this is all about?
Yeah, what this is that Donald Trump, you know, is bluffing, like you said, with this civilization-ending threat. So if you consider that in the equation, Donald Trump believes in his, you know, art of the deal. To attain the upper hand, he has to go, you know, way over the top with some ridiculous demand, with some ridiculous threat, with some ridiculous claim. He has to come to the table with, you know, totally outrageous positions on purpose. So then he believes that gives him the upper hand. That's why he just continuously makes these ridiculous claims and ridiculous threats. Right. Now, the Iranian side is not playing a game. See, from Donald Trump's point of view, this is like a game. You see, he's like, oh, they put humans, civilians, around their power plants and on their bridges. What did he say? He said, quote, they're not allowed to do that.
Right.
Like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, there's rules. Like, we have to be, like, he's thinking that he can destroy the civilian infrastructure of Iran to make them die a slow, painful death back to the Stone Age. But the civilians themselves cannot use their bodies to prevent it, risking sudden death. No, they have to accept slowly dying. And, that, and these are the rules, you see. So in his mind, it's like a game. So what we have here is a culture clash. He doesn't understand the culture of who he's dealing with. The Iranians have laid out 10 points that they insist be met. They're not bluffing. This isn't coming to the table with things that they don't really want. This isn't a fake posture of 10 demands that it's really just for show. No, these are the actual 10 demands. And if these 10 demands aren't met, the Strait of Hormuz is just not going to be open. And there really is no game in this. There's no posturing or guile behind it. So, you know, he has no idea the culture that he's dealing with. He's dealing with them like he has dealt with so many people in the past, like he's negotiating with the city of New York for property tax abatements or something. You know, this is not going to work. And so he's basically learning the hard way that they don't really care about the threats. The threats aren't working. They had little girls and grandmas on the bridge and on the power plant. So go ahead and bomb it. And they don't care. And it's a religious and nationalist country. So the Iranian people right now are saying that they're not falling for it, that everybody in Iran who's calling for a ceasefire is actually outing themselves as a foreign collaborator or betrayer of national interest. The public of Iran have gone into the streets and are demanding no ceasefire. The public are protesting to not accept ceasefire. The public of Iran are demanding a continuation of the war, and nobody is accepting to abandon Lebanon, because from their point of view, it's pretty obvious that this is a ruse, and once they eliminate the resistance in Lebanon, then they'll just come for Iran later. So why would they just let them be taken out one by one? It doesn't really make any sense. So the Iranians are going to fire in about 3 or 4 hours, maybe 4 or 5 hours. They're going to do a huge response against Israel. And if Israel continues to attack Lebanon, that's how it's going to continue to happen. Now, the military equation between Lebanon and Israel had no change based on these bombings. This had no effect. This is just killing civilians. They are not able to target Hezbollah like this. Hezbollah is underground in hardened positions. And the Israeli invasion has been basically a failure. So to summarize, to really get to the heart of the issue here, what you have to understand is that Bibi Netanyahu uses violence. Bibi Netanyahu uses war for political gains. He's not a warrior. He's not a soldier-type person. He's a politician. His mind thinks politically. He uses war for politics. So the bombing today is to save his political career. It's not for a military objective. That's just not how his mind works. He never used war for the purpose of actually winning a war or achieving military objectives. Like, it's been forever since this guy has achieved any actual, you know, military objectives. He uses, you know, subterfuge and things like that. So he uses betrayals, he uses, you know, blackmail, bribes, assassinations, these kind of things. He's not thinking like, I'm going to conquer this land and fortify it and I'm going to hold it. Well, he really can't. And in the case of Lebanon, he just simply can't. It's not physically possible. And so the bombing of Lebanon is just terrorism. It's just an act of rage. It's a political expediency move. It helps Bibi Netanyahu look strong. And he apparently overpowered Donald Trump, because the ceasefire did include Lebanon. Then Bibi Netanyahu called Trump, and Trump changed his tune. Trump changed his tune at the request of Bibi Netanyahu. It's pretty much cut and dry. I mean, there really is no doubt about this. So now the whole ceasefire has blown up because they cannot accept not bombing Lebanon, because it would be too embarrassing for Bibi Netanyahu in specific. It is specifically Bibi Netanyahu's career that is causing all of this. And the Lebanese public now, this is kind of dark what I'm about to say. You know, I hope no one gets offended by this. I'm just reporting this. I'm just reporting, okay? Don't get mad at me. I'm just reporting. The Lebanese public now has said that they are demanding that the resistance in Lebanon attack Israel in kind. And you see, it's very anti-Semitic and hateful of me to say that Israel should be treated how they treat others. Didn't you know that? It's downright evil of me to say that. But the resistance in Lebanon is now saying that they're tired of Hezbollah primarily attacking, or exclusively attacking, whatever you want to say, military targets. They're tired of it. They're actually requesting that Hezbollah start attacking civilians because of how much suffering the civilians of Lebanon are being put under intentionally by Israel. Now, is Hezbollah going to listen to this? Probably not. Probably not. Hezbollah is probably not going to just try to kill hundreds of civilians in one day. They don't really do that. They don't. I mean, that it's frankly a waste of missiles, because what is the military objective there? What is the point of that? Israel doesn't pay for their missiles, so I guess they don't care. But if you're making your missiles underground and you don't have that many, it's probably not smart to just waste them on random people. I mean, kind of is.
Well, and of course that is, you know, shocking to hear to people who are convinced that Hezbollah, like Iran, are just insane, you know, Islamic extremist terrorists, that their whole goal is to kill as many people as they want. In reality, if you look at what they've been doing, I mean, I've been sort of shocked at how hesitant, how reticent Hezbollah has been to, you know, really launch attacks full force. I mean, ever since October 7th, I was expecting, all right, Hezbollah is going to get really involved in a big way. And they're always very sort of circumspect. They're always very careful about where they actually use force. Again, you can see that as a compliment or otherwise, but it's just the fact on the ground. And when you look at the facts on the ground, you see that they are not trying or, you know, even accidentally killing hundreds of people in Israel in the way that Israel is killing people in Lebanon. From the Metro, this is the headline. Scenes of devastation after Israel bombs Lebanon 100 times in 10 minutes. So when you're talking about, you know, rage-filled terror bombing, 100 bombings in 10 minutes all over Lebanon with no strategic goal or value whatsoever.
No, it's like a mall, an apartment complex, a pharmacy. It's just literally random spots. I mean, they have no targets. If they had targets, they would have bombed them yesterday. They have no target. They don't know what to bomb. It's a cram-packed, very dense country. And it's full of people of different confessions and different backgrounds. And the population, one-third of the population, supplies their young men into Hezbollah. So what they would like to do is give it the Gaza treatment, where they want to attack the population base that supplies the fighters. They're thinking, you know, to exterminate the root of the issue. But the problem is, this isn't Gaza. You know, this is a huge number of people. It's a much bigger country. They're spread out over a much bigger area, and they would need a lot more bombs. And the Gaza treatment was not an efficient use of bombs. That was not a cost-effective method of flattening an area. It wasted a lot of bombs. And that's why people like Lindsey Graham, they say, well, why don't you just nuke the whole area? Well, he's saying that because that would be a lot more effective. The problem is, that would just kill a bunch of random people in Lebanon, which would bring a huge international outcry, specifically in the form of, you know, Russia and China. Russia and China have specifically warned Israel about going too far using nuclear weapons against civilians. And there are definitely madmen in Israel who would have no problem with that. I mean, how many times have we heard since 9/11, just glass the whole Middle East? That's a very common sentiment. But, you know, the Iranians, what they're saying, and I just spoke to people in Iran in a space a couple hours ago, people in Iran, actual Iranians, they're saying that it's a new dawn. It's over. They're not even going to listen to any attempt of a ceasefire moving forward. The Strait of Hormuz is not going to be opened no matter what. And if the energy infrastructure of Iran is hit, the energy infrastructure of all the countries that are being used to facilitate the war on Iran will be absolutely destroyed. They're going to turn the lights off. And they said not one drop of oil is going to move through this region. So the Iranians are basically saying, do your worst. I mean, they're done. Like I said, it's a culture clash. When you're studying war, you have to study the culture of your opponent. And they obviously do not comprehend, Donald Trump does not comprehend the culture of the Iranians. He has made the hardliners take power 100%. As you and Alex Jones have been saying, these actions have emboldened and empowered the hardliners of Iran, right? I mean, it's common sense. Everybody would know that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, you know, whether it's the 10-point plan or just, you know, common sense and what is even possible at this point, I mean, we are in a worse position now than we were before the war. Even if all you're talking about is the Strait of Hormuz, you know, you're talking about now the Strait of Hormuz, which was free, 40 days ago. Best case scenario now is it becomes a cash cow for Iran, where they're raking in something like $500 billion a year by taxing, toll gate basically for the Strait of Hormuz. So this has been a unmitigated disaster, in my opinion. We have about 4 minutes left here. Where does it go from here, John? What do you think is next? How do you think Israel responds to this? How do you think Iran responds to Israel's outrages in Lebanon?
The classic Donald Trump, MO is now he's going to have to come up with some other super ridiculous over the top threat. He really has no other method of operation. That's all he does. And so he's going to let it cool down for a little bit so that the next threat could be really believable. He has to have some teeth on it. He has to, and this is how Donald Trump thinks. I'm not saying this is smart. I'm not saying this is going to work. I'm just saying this is the only way he knows how to operate. So he's going to try to come up with some threat, some super dramatic thing that's absolutely horrible that he doesn't actually even want to do, and he has to make it believable. And then he's going to try to, you know, it's not going to work. I mean, that ship has sailed. In other words, it depends. Do we want to actually solve the problem, or do we want to just have a long, drawn-out war? If you want to solve the problem, you know, Bibi Netanyahu is you know, his career has to come to an end.
Yeah.
That's if you want to solve the problem. If you want the problem to keep going, it's just going to be more of the same.
That's what I was, I was wondering, like, what do you think the likelihood is that, like, you know, Joe Kent, a lot of others are out saying, you know, if you want this peace deal, ceasefire, anything to last, you got to restrain Israel. Obviously, Trump is no interest in trying to restrain Israel. But if Israel is bombing the hell out of Lebanon and that's putting our ceasefire in danger, I mean, what, you know, how do things have to lie to where we are in a way forced to restrain Israel? And would we even do that? Like, what do you think of that potentiality?
Restraining Israel is a strange thing because we're the ones who created and funded and enabled, well, the deep state of the United States. You know, it's not really the public of the United States. So it would be counterintuitive. It would be like a self-restricting at that point. So it would be an act at the end of the day. It would be nothing but theatrics. It's not real because as soon as the tables turned, they would then enable Israel right back. And so, you know, the chances of de-escalation are quickly disappearing. The latest treachery, I mean, you know, it was hard enough to get Iran to negotiate and then to mess it up again. I mean, it's almost like unbelievable how bad they are at getting things done properly. So it was hard enough to persuade them to negotiate again. Clearly, one of the points of the negotiation, I mean, the mediator tweeted out, effective immediately, there's a truce, including Lebanon. And then now Donald Trump is saying, and J.D. Vance, by the way, just came out and said, oh, it's just a misunderstanding. See, they thought Lebanon was part of the ceasefire, but we never guaranteed anything about Lebanon. Well, probably they should have brought Israel to the negotiating table because it's Israel that's attacking Lebanon. So if Israel is not at the negotiating table, how can they promise that Israel won't attack Lebanon without even including Israel at the negotiating table? So in one respect, the Israelis have a point. They weren't even asked. They weren't even there. They didn't promise that. That's a good point. But why did the United States promise that then? The United States is supposed to be able to control Israel, but they don't. They can't. They apparently do not control Israel. And so Donald Trump has embarrassed himself and us yet again because he agreed to a deal and then Israel made him change his mind on a key part of the deal, which blew up the whole deal. That's what happened. Flat out in public. There's no denying it. This is what happened. They agreed to a deal that had no attacking. And again, they can attack Lebanon all they want because everyone needs to understand. Iran pays to rebuild all those houses that are blown up. They did it three times already. So blowing up all these houses and blowing up all these shops, it's just terrorism. There's no military strategic gain. Iran is going to pay to rebuild all that. Iran spends billions of dollars to rebuild stuff in Lebanon all the time. And they're going to do it again. When this is over and they put a tax on the Strait of Hormuz,
the money's going to come rolling in. Well, thank you very much for the update. That's Lebanon John. Follow him on X at @Lebanon_John. That's @Lebanon_John. We, of course, do the Moonbase Live. Follow us on Rumble. And we may do an episode tonight if you're lucky.
Everything I sell to you works. Obviously, that's the goal. So that you get it and you like it and you want to get it again. Everything I sell to you, we put deep research into and I personally use. Now, I've been promoting zeolites for decades with great sponsors because they really work. I'm going to tell you what they are. Well, Bigley, our sponsor, has a really high quality private label, top selling brand that we were able to private label. We're bringing to you right now. With the unprecedented toxins in the environment, with the chemtrailing, all the garbage in the food, it is more important than ever to take zeolites on a regular basis. But not all zeolites are created equal. This is really a high quality zeolite. Please do your own research and then go to the olivestonestore.com and secure our high-quality zeolite formula. Now let's go over just some of the incredible facts. We're swimming in toxins every single day. Metals from the air, chemicals in the food and water. Your body needs help binding and eliminating this garbage before it builds up and destroys your cells. Enter Zeolite Detox Defense, advanced binding agent. This isn't some gimmick. Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral with a unique cage-like crystalline structure that acts like a molecular trap. Through ion exchange and absorption, it selectively grabs positively charged toxins, heavy metals, ammonia, and other unwanted compounds while letting beneficial minerals stay put. Then it escorts them straight out of your system through your gut. Paired with folic acid, it also supports healthy mineral transport and cleaner internal environment. Users report feeling lighter, more balanced, and clear-headed with consistent daily use. Just one dose a day gives you 60 full servings of detox support. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't steer you wrong. You know that. If you love our methylene blue, if you love our bovine colostrum, if you love the other incredible products like our T3 iodine, you are going to love this Zeolite Detox Formula. Secure yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you haven't checked out the other supplements like our methylene red that's proprietary to us, our ultramethylene blue that is on record the strongest and the best, then check it out today. And while you're there, check out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it, to spread the word of freedom in America and worldwide. Bottom line, thanks for keeping us on the air over the years. We're facing some of the biggest challenges ever to stay on the air. But thanks to you standing with us as our partners, the InfoWar, we are stronger than ever. So thank you so much for your support. Now please visit theolivestonestore.com today. And if you want to get massive discounts on all the supplements, sign up as a subscriber, lock in your orders in the future. You can cancel any time, so all you're really locking in is the massive discounts. Same thing with VIPs, cancel any time, $30 a month, get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, special sales on everything. So if you're buying anything at theolivestonestore.com, you should be a VIP. Thank you so much for your support. Now secure your Zeolite formula now at theolivestonestore.com. I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene blue before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier it would. I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Back, folks. This is the War Room. We've got some updates to the supposed ceasefire in Iran. I'm going to bring you those. In the next hour, I'm going to get into the history, the 39-day history of the war in Iran with a bunch of videos illustrating exactly what we're talking about, because you forget. It wasn't that long ago, but I forgot. I mean, when you got Trump issuing threats to, you know, eradicate all of the civilian infrastructure in Iran, like four or five times over a month, they all kind of blend together. We'll lay it out for you, the full timeline. But let's get to what has actually happened so far. I think we got a couple tweets here that I think lay it out as fully as you could hope. This is from Crunchy Rugger on X. Trump, do as I say or I will bomb you back to the Stone Ages. Iran responds, best I can do is this 10-point plan where you give us everything we want. Trump, deal. Fox News, Trump is a master negotiator. I mean, that is how it went. This is the very confusing thing about all of this. Donald Trump said, we're going to bomb you back to the Stone Age. We're going to eradicate your civilization unless you open the Strait of Hormuz. Iran didn't open the Strait of Hormuz. Trump backed down. There is no other way to spin that other than they called his bluff. Be mad at me all you want. That's just, what else is it? What else is it? Strait of Hormuz is not open. So what are we talking about? And the ceasefire 10-point agreement that they supposedly agreed to, they never actually agreed to it. It was always just an excuse to act like they weren't having their bluff called. Saying, oh, okay, they came to us with this agreement, so we'll give it 2 weeks. We'll delay for 2 weeks so we can look at this proposal. Knowing that they were probably not going to accept the proposal, but it was a nice excuse to back down from his horrifying threat. So, again, call that whatever you want. That's a bluff being called. Okay? Because this 10-point agreement that Iran put forward is literally just a checklist of everything that they want. And if Trump were to agree to it just outright, like they sort of hinted that they would, it would be extremely surprising. Extremely surprising. Now, the contention right now is that Israel says Lebanon was never a part of the ceasefire agreement. Trump now says it was never a part of the agreement. J.D. Vance now says it was never a part of the agreement. However, if you look at the original statement from the Pakistan prime minister who helped to bring about this conclusion, he said very straightforward. With the greatest humility, I'm pleased to announce that the Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States of America, along with their allies, have agreed to an immediate ceasefire everywhere, including Lebanon and elsewhere, effective immediately. I mean, that was in the original announcement. It didn't say just like, it's not like it would be different if it was just saying, you know, and allies, and you could say, well, they didn't explicitly say, no, they explicitly said Lebanon. So it obviously was a part of the original ceasefire agreement that they immediately broke. And so Iran said, okay, then the Strait of Hormuz is closed. So at this moment, the Strait of Hormuz is closed as of now. Okay. And there's the actual original tweet that I read yesterday. It was the first tweet about any of this. So that's just not true that Lebanon wasn't a part of it. It was supposed to be part of it. And obviously if Iran, you know, temporarily closed or opened the Strait of Hormuz on the assumption that these ceasefire provisions were agreed to, then that means that we probably did agree to them. We just didn't intend to ever actually stick to them, which again is eminently predictable. J.D. Vance has made a couple statements to the press recently. Let's go to the latest one. Here he is outside of Air Force One, where he talks about the 10-point proposal that we supposedly accepted yesterday.
About Iran, sir. So let me just say, given that you guys are going to ask about Iran, let me just say a few things, actually. So, number one, I think it's very important for the American media to be honest with the American people on this particular issue, because it affects not just, you know, the normal issues of public policy. It actually affects peace and war. And here's what I mean. So in the past couple of days, I've seen a lot of reporting from the American media about the 10-point proposal that the Iranians have made. Now, as I know, because I've been involved in this, there are three different 10-point proposals, at least that I've seen floating around. The first 10-point proposal was something that was submitted, and we think, frankly, was probably written by ChatGPT, that was submitted to Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner. That immediately went in the garbage and was rejected. There was a second 10-point proposal that was much more reasonable, that was based on some back and forth between us, between the Pakistanis and that is the 10-point proposal that the president was referencing in his truth yesterday. And then, frankly, I've seen a third 10-point proposal that's even more maximalist than the first 10-point proposal that's been floating around various social media channels. Now, here's what's interesting about all this, is that I've seen various organs, the New York Times, CNN, others, pick up and run the original 10-point proposal based on little more than a random Yahoo in Iran submitting it to public access television in the country of Iran, and then them saying that somehow represents the negotiating position of the government. It's the equivalent of somebody in, let's say, a Democratic councilman in Boise, Idaho, saying something crazy. the local public access TV picking up that crazy.
I'm sorry. I just don't believe him. So then what was the ceasefire yesterday? I mean, the ceasefire yesterday was about this 10-point proposal. That's what kept being said. And he's saying there's some other 10-point proposal. Trump is saying there's like even more. He's like, I don't even know what a list is. It's like, so what was the 10-point proposal? I mean, it's been acknowledged. And again, it's like, all, you know, all these mainstream headlines about it. What is Iran's 10-point proposal and how does it compare to U.S. demands? Iran publicly released on Wednesday what it said was the 10-point framework for talks that President Trump described as a, quote, workable basis on which to negotiate and into the war. I mean, so Iran released it. Trump said it was workable and that this is where they'd be, you know, basing it, you know, what they'd be basing it off of. So where's the misinformation? What are we talking about here? Much of it consisted of maximalist demands that looked difficult, if not impossible, to reconcile with U.S. aims. A White House official said the points do not match what Mr. Trump was referring to. The official spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss internal White House discussions. Iran released its version of the proposal the morning after the United States and Iran agreed to a two-week ceasefire and calls for American troops to leave the region, reasserts Iran's control over strategic Strait of Hormuz, and maintains Iran's right to nuclear enrichment. But it was Iran who released the version. I don't know what he's talking about. Some local access thing. Not what happened. Trump said, we've agreed to a 10-point proposal. The next day, Iran published the proposal saying this is what Trump is referencing. So I just don't believe J.D. Vance, which is ironic because he starts that video saying, you know, the media really has to be honest about this. Well, then what's the 10-point plan that you agreed to? Because apparently there was a short-lived ceasefire based on a 10-point plan. You know, you're not going to provide that to us. Then this is all we have to go on. And as far as I can tell, this is the 10-point plan. It's just that they were lying about agreeing to it. I think that's what actually happened here, is that they were looking for an off-ramp. They were looking for a way out of looking like chumps by not fulfilling the ultimatum that they put forward. And so they said, okay, well, just say we agree to the 10-point plan as a basis. Don't say we agree to it. Say we agree to it as a basis for talks, and then we'll just walk it back tomorrow. Like, I think that's actually what happened. They never intended to stick to these 10-point plan. Now they're muddying the water to try to pretend like this wasn't even the plan they looked at. How could it not be? What other plan were you looking at? Again, the announcements from the official Iran channels say it. The announcements from the Pakistani official channels who brokered the deal said it. The mainstream media on every side says it. And your way to say that they're all wrong is just to say, we don't even know what you're looking at. There's like three different lists and we don't even know which one we're suggesting. It's like, well, this doesn't even make sense. So we can look at the 10-point proposal and see that it is a maximalist wish list, if that's how you want to put it. This is Iran's 10-point plan, which Donald Trump says is a workable basis for negotiation. This is from Liam McCollum today. I don't know, but this looks like strategic defeat to me. Am I supposed to consider this a victory when this was the predictable outcome and the war should have never happened in the first place? Don't get me wrong. I'll take any off-ramp, but the U.S. objectively is worse off after this. Donald Trump can turn this into a strategic victory only if he finally follows Reagan's footsteps and tells the Israelis they're cut off if they break the ceasefire and continue the war. Here's the 10-point peace plan. One, guarantees that Iran will not be attacked again. Two, a permanent end to the war, not just a ceasefire. Three, end to Israeli strikes on Lebanon. Again, third point in this list that we apparently agreed to. Four, lifting all U.S. sanctions on Iran. Five, an end to all regional fighting against Iranian allies. So that, of course, means Lebanon and Syria and all these other places. I guess not Syria anymore. Iran would reopen the Strait of Hormuz. This would be the only thing that would be beneficial to us, or like, you know, correspond with our war goals, except Iran would impose a $2 million fee per ship transmitting Hormuz. Iran would split the fees with Oman. Iran would establish rules for safe passage through the Hormuz Strait, and Iran would use these fees for reconstruction later instead of reparations. It's actually not a bad deal if we wanted to take it. I mean, we do end up worse off, but Why don't we become allies with Iran? Why don't we work with Iran since they are actually better than Israel in like every different way you could possibly imagine? I don't know. Well, I do know. I'm not allowed to say. I mean, I am allowed. It's the Jewish control of America. I should just say it. That's why. Because really, why would, you know, why are we enemies with Iran? It genuinely doesn't make any sense. If you want to tell me it's because they're extremist Muslim, then why are we friends with Saudi Arabia? You can't have it both ways, okay? If we're enemies with Iran because of their intractable religious extremism, then it just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense. Saudi Arabia is literally more extremist Muslim, more, you know, traditional, hardcore conservative Muslim. Right, here's Fox and Friends laying out the Iranian proposed peace plan with Mark Levin getting so angry at it. They never intended to stick to this. It was just the excuse they needed to not look like they were chickening out. And they were chickening, and I'm glad he chickened out. Again, it's like you say that Trump chickened out or Trump backed down. It's like he did. I'm glad he did. He never should have made the threat in the first place. But he did back down. Keith Woods at Keith Woods YT on X points out what a stupid thing this would be if these are actually agreed to. Iran in 2016 had a nuclear program that was constrained, extensive international monitoring. The Strait of Hormuz was open with record low oil prices, 1 year breakout time to nukes, no military conflict, reformers growing politically. Now, of course, was in the wake of the JCPOA, the nuclear agreement Obama signed. Now, after two Trump terms, control of the Strait of Hormuz is in Iran's hand. There's no guarantee on nuclear enrichment. Reduced international inspections, a shorter breakout time, U.S. THAAD systems in the region have been destroyed and missile defenses depleted. Ayatollah Khomeini has been replaced by Ayatollah Khomeini. Huge propaganda win for the regime with reformers undermined. I'm sure Trump supporters will look back and think this was definitely worth spending $200 billion and all that political capital on just before the all-important midterm elections. Yeah, I'm sure. Again, for people like actually celebrating this like a victory, it's just crazy. It really is inexplicable to me how you could be considering this a victory at all. But of course, it really doesn't matter. Then the thing you need to understand is we're real human beings that actually care about the world and have positions independent of political considerations, positions like we shouldn't murder children, you know, those types of positions that are for some reason lacking on for a lot of people on the right. But the thing is, imagine two different timelines. Imagine the timeline where Trump backs down, gets the concession, which he didn't actually get, but the timeline we're in right now, right? We're in one timeline in which Trump didn't fulfill his threat. Now imagine the timeline where Trump did fulfill his threat, and we are living in a world today where Iran has been utterly brutalized, million people dead, like, you know, whatever he was planning on doing with his civilizational ending attack. Would the Trump supporters sound any different today? I would, right? I would be pissed off. I'd be disheartened. I'd be horrified by what we'd done. I'd be sitting here saying, I can't believe Trump actually did this. He's a monster. Like, I would have been in a very different mood today. I'm relieved. I'm happy it's going this way. I'm also just pissed off it's still going on, but it'd be very different if things had gone differently. Now, for the Trump sycophants, they're more like NPCs where they're going to be happy no matter what. Trump backs off, Trump doesn't back off, they have the same tweet ready and rearing to go. Hit send, right? Wow, Trump's amazing, he did it. Incredible. Take that, panickins, you didn't think it was possible. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No matter what the outcome is, they're going to say the exact same thing. Because no matter what happens, they're going to pretend it was a success from Trump. They're going to pretend that it was him winning. They're going to pretend that, you know, we're all dumb for not wanting him to do this crazy crap. Trump is not threatening to annihilate the Iranian people. He's warning the radical regime to reopen the Strait of Hormuz by 8 p.m. or face total destruction of its power plants, bridges, and infrastructures that have enabled 47 years of extortion and terror. He literally said, I don't want that to happen. Okay. Yeah, okay. Great point, Greg. 3 points to watch out for is from Mario Nafal. One, if the U.S. keeps claiming that Lebanon was never part of the ceasefire deal, it means Netanyahu is calling the shots. True. Two, if Iran doesn't attack Israel as promised, then they abandon Hezbollah, Lebanon is screwed, and Iran is much weaker than it seems. Three, if Iran does end up controlling the Strait of Hormuz and is able to charge a toll booth fee, it means they won the war and Trump abandoned the Gulf to end the war. For the next 24 hours, all eyes are on one or two. That's interesting. I think that's true. I don't think they are going to abandon Hezbollah again because it's not the strategic thing to do. It would be silly, just like Lebanon John laid out. You're just going to let them eradicate you one by one? That doesn't make any sense. From pro underscore trading on X, if Iran is able to charge $2 million per tanker, they're going to make around $280 million a day. That's $500 billion in 5 years. For comparison, the Obama administration gave Iran $1.7 billion in cash. Not great, guys. Not great. Of course, I don't think Obama ever gave Iran pallets of cash. What happened was we seized Iranian money that we then returned to them as part of the deal. It was always their money. Okay. Just clarify that as I have the entire time I've been on air. But that may be the way to approach this is clearly this ceasefire that doesn't actually exist was very disfavored by Israel, but Iran, they're out there cheering and waving flags and celebrating. So I guess if you actually are in favor of the ceasefire, you're kind of on Iran's side. So I guess everybody that is glad that Trump took the ceasefire, you're kind of all anti-Semitic Muslims now. So you're all leftist. You're all AOC. All right. You're all you love the mullahs, and you're all secretly Muslim and leftist. So that's just how it is. I don't make the rules, but clearly, if you were mad about Obama giving Iran, you know, $1.7 billion, you're probably really mad at Trump giving them $500 billion over 5 years, huh? That probably wasn't a smart idea. But nothing actually is consistent. So it doesn't actually matter. So it doesn't actually matter to these people. It matters to me. Let's go to clip number 9 here, because this is the Israeli opposition leader, Yair Lapid. And here's what he thinks about Netanyahu and the ceasefire and everything. Let's watch. He says, citizens of Israel, in a few hours or a day or two or whenever he feels it's possible to come out of the bunker, Benjamin Netanyahu will appear before the state of Israel and try to sell you that the campaign in Iran was a success. That would be a complete lie. The army did an amazing job, the best air force in the world, did everything they asked of it. And more. The people of Israel showed national resilience and determination. We have inflicted severe damage on Iran precisely because of this. The complete failure is even more striking. What happened here is a political disaster on a scale I can't remember. I was prime minister. I was foreign minister. I don't remember such a political breakdown. It has become clear that military power without a political plan does not lead to victory. Netanyahu led us to an equally strategic collapse. There was a blasphemous combination of arrogance, irresponsibility, lack of planning, faulty meter work, zero care in home front, lies that were sold to the Americans and damaged trust between the two countries, a military success that turned into a political disaster. He's not happy. He's not very happy about it. Makes me happy. You understand why he's mad, though. You understand that if you've been watching this show, if you watch the Eight Front War, if you watch Benjamin Netanyahu's statements a couple weeks ago, you know that Israel has staked everything on this gamble. That to them, it was worth it to sacrifice their future, which is exactly what they did. They knew exactly how unpopular they would become in America, a place that they rely on support. That's fine. It's all worth it if they can take out Iran. That's why he's so mad. That's why this is unacceptable. That's why he's calling this the biggest political disaster. It's because they know that if they don't keep pushing, if they don't keep driving, if they don't fully and once and for all destroy Iran to the point that it's a failed state, then they are screwed. I've said it a million times. Might not be this year, might not be in 5 years, but in 10 or 20 years, Israel is going to be hated by the vast majority of the people in the world. They're already disliked more than they're liked by people here in America, meaning that we're going to start voting with that in mind, meaning we're going to elect people that don't like Israel, meaning they're going to get cut off from our funds, meaning they're going to die because they can't survive without us. That's the gamble that they've made. So it ain't over by a long shot. They're not going to let the war with Iran end. And if it requires them assassinating Donald Trump or setting off a miniaturized nuke in an American city, they'll do it because they have gambled everything on this. And there's no ends to which they will not go to achieve their goals. We are in a very dangerous situation right now. And it, you know, Trump needs to stand up to them. He needs to show that he is, in fact, the president of the United States and assert our authority over Israel for their own sake. But will he do it? I would give anything to be a part of the discussions going on right now at those higher levels. I'm not sure what exactly is being discussed, but I could very easily see a situation where Trump and J.D. Vance are like forced to capitulate to Israel because Israel, they know that Israel will like actually kill a bunch of Americans. I don't know. I'm just speculating, but 60% of Americans now have an unfavorable view of Israel. That's up from 53% last year and 42% in 2022, that is. In both political parties, a majority of adults under age 50 view Israel negatively, with 84% of Democrats and 57% of Republicans in the youth bracket. But clearly the trend is down, unfavorable is up. And that's going to continue. And it is a generational divide. So the longer time goes on, the more and more that gap widens, the less and less America supports Israel. This is what they're really afraid of. This is the timetable that they're racing against. They don't have an infinite amount of time. They have right now to achieve this goal. That's why they're going so insane. That's why this whole Iran war has been chaotic. I'm going to do the timeline in the next hour for you. It's all about trying to desperately, frantically get this done because they have set themselves a deadline. So we are in Israeli false flag territory to a very high degree right now, and we'll see how all this plays out. We're going to go back in time and just, you know, give you a trip through the last 40 days here in the next hour. We'll be back on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
Let me do this. The folks at Bigley, about 7-8 months ago, came out with this top-of-the-line Faraday cage backpack with all these special pockets, super high quality. I'd previously bought a bag for myself personally like this, similar brand, for $500. The problem was they only got 500 of these. Well, guess what? They got a couple thousand of them finally in. It took 7-8 months. It's a $600 value, just the bag, for $249. But guess what comes in it? America First Faraday bag, America First tactical trench knife. It's badass. America First t-shirt, MK Ultra atomic defense supplements, Shilajit gummy, Shilajit capsules, Irish CMOS capsules, Warcry premium product, and more. And VIP members get it for $199. Also, as you can now read in the newspapers, the Texas receiver is saying he's not going to pay the rent or the bills. So you guys, when are we going to be shut down? Tomorrow? 2 weeks from now? I'm going to just wait till the lights turn off, okay? You'll probably see InfoWars go down the site. You see streaming shut down. Once we can't do it, we have the All Shows Network built at Bigley Owns, and I'm going to go over and do it there. But I'm going to ride this horse till it dies. I'm going to ride this race car till the engine blows or the wheels come off. Or I crash into the embankment. I ain't giving up. I'm riding this horse till I win or I lose. And then the media's like, oh, he's finally going to lose. Oh, yeah, all right. I am the InfoWar. Our listeners are the InfoWar. And we got a whole line. Here's the first one of a limited edition Veterans of the InfoWar t-shirts. Look at this. This is badass, and it's the troops on Iwo Jima raising the American flag with the InfoWars patch where the stars are. InfoWars lives forever. It is an amazing limited edition shirt. Look at that bad boy. And it funds this operation, but also the Alex Jones Network to keep us on the air. We need funds. We want to get more reporters back and expand, but we need your support. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
In the heart of what was once the rugged, unyielding Republic of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott stands exposed as a willing participant in the quiet handover of the Lone Star State.
As long as I'm governor of this great state, Texas will be a land for the Indian community, a land for
Abbott's recent directive freezing new H-1B petitions for state agencies and universities now rings hollow.
Governor Abbott made the announcement directing all public universities and state agencies to freeze new H-1B visa applications. Governor Abbott was on the Mark Davis radio show talking about his plan.
What job is it in our public schools in the state of Texas that these H-1B visas personnel are fulfilling that we can't fulfill here in our own public schools? I mean, those are exactly the types of questions that we're looking at.
A superficial gesture after years of courting the very demographic overhaul now transforming Texas suburbs into Little India.
Now, I want you to come to this area because as you guys can see behind me, this is a residential area and you have this very large, very intricate temple that is in this location where you quite frankly would not expect it. And one of the first things I saw when we got here was a huge pile of shoes outside because you cannot wear shoes inside the temple. So you have a lot of people that are walking around this area barefoot. And I actually went inside myself because I wanted to go check it out. And when you get inside, you see people worshiping multiple deities. And the one that did stick out to me was the area where people were going to pray for blessings of health and also for work visas. Now, we're in Frisco, Texas, and going back to that changing demographic, back in 2010, you had about 10% Asian or Indian population in this area. That has since surged to over 30%, and on top of that, Texans telling me as well that some of these school districts now primarily are made up of demographically Asian students. So this is one of the ways that the culture is changing up here. You have multiple Hindu temples all over the DFW area.
Multiple H-1B-linked companies registered to single addresses have funneled donations to Frisco, Texas's first Indian mayor.
Take a look at this room of full of concerned citizens. They want you to answer questions about why some of the mayor's biggest donors are Indians that don't live in Frisco. Is it because the mayor's real estate business, or is he being bought out to ignore an Indian takeover? Why are people with multiple H-1B companies registered to one address donating to Frisco's first Indian mayor? We know Fortune 100 companies are employing foreigners on H-1B visas, but why are Indians in Frisco opening up their own businesses tied to H-1B? It's not a coincidence that Frisco's Indian population exploded 4,510% and there's potential visa fraud here.
The H-1B program landed in Texas with the 1990 Immigration Act, sold as a narrow fix for specialized skill shortages. What followed was a flood, especially from India, turning tech corridors and booming suburbs into outposts of chain migration and wage arbitrage.
I came here on H-1B 2004. Everybody was Americans. But the fast forward, now you don't see any Americans.
Where are you from?
Hyderabad.
I'm from India.
From India?
Where in India?
Hyderabad?
Why do you think Frisco became such a big hub for Indians?
They have their own community here. Right.
No, it's not like that.
Not like that here in Frisco?
No.
Motherland India or Texas, USA? Oh,
obviously Motherland India.
Obviously Motherland India.
Hyderabad, of course.
Really? Did you come here on H-1B?
Yeah. I'm an H-1B.
H-1B?
Yeah.
You're H-1B?
Yeah.
Working here at 7-11?
Yeah.
We need more or less H-1B people here?
We need a lot less. I have two master's degrees. I was making over $100,000 a year. They said, you're too expensive. We're going to hire Indians.
Now I'm looking into some of these companies. I think there may be more than meets the eye. Why not check in and see what we find? This one is Tech Bits on the LCA. We've got two 2025 workers on site. I don't think anyone is here at Tech Bits.
This is colonization. This isn't immigration. The Indian loyalty remains overseas. Cultural enclaves form parallel economies, and American families get priced out or pushed aside. This isn't stewardship. It's selling Texas out. While private sector H-1B abuse rolls on unchecked, the governor's cozy relationship with the Indian community betrays the very people who built Texas. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra methylene blue. Blue.
I know. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra methylene blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra methylene blue. 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 I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up
about it.
Get yours now at thealexshowstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. In this final hour, we'll be laying out a timeline of the Iran conflict, the latest flare-up of the Iran conflict. Now that we ostensibly are in some sort of a pause that doesn't really exist, but we'll use it as an excuse to pause ourselves and go back and look at how we got here and see if we can't identify some patterns over the last 39 days. I do want to remind you that thealexjonesstore.com is where you go to support us. And it's so funny because I was always saying this, and now I hear Alex saying it too, where I'm like 72% off. That doesn't even make sense. How are we giving people 72% off? This is genuinely crazy and irresponsible of us. But hey, go for it. Take advantage of it. I don't know. We're selling it. You might as well buy it. But it's funny because even Alex now is like, wait, what? 72% off? This is nuts. But yeah, methylene blue tincture, 72% off when you sign up for the subscription. You lock it in for life. As long as you stay subscribed, this deal will not last long because it can't. So go now. Take advantage of it. And lock in your ultramethylene blue basically at cost, more or less, forever. Sign up for the regular delivery. And of course, we have a new InfoWars cooler bundle that can be purchased for just $99. It regularly sells for $199.97. You're saving over $100 on this. It's 50% off. VIP members take an additional $20 off. It's the InfoWars Ultimate Portable cooler. It's rugged, insulated, and built to keep your drinks cold for hours. Plus, InfoWars Signature Edition polarized sunglasses and limited edition InfoWars koozies. And of course, we are not long for this world, so get your InfoWars branded merchandise now while you still can. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. So, where to start the Iran timeline? Do we start it 47 years ago, like so many seem to think that all of this began? Do we start it even earlier than that? Do we start it with the Shah or the overthrow of the Shah, the CIA activity? Do we go back farther than that? I mean, do we talk about, you know, the British Petroleum's involvement in Iran? Do we talk about any of that? Let's just, I guess, for the sake of keeping this an hour, let's just go back to June of last year after Operation Midnight Hammer. It claimed it was a big success, but it changed things. It accelerated things in a big way. One of the things that occurred after Operation Midnight Hammer is that Ayatollah Khomeini removed a restriction he'd previously had on production of missiles, keeping missiles under 2,000-mile range, things like that, basically said, hey, they're coming after us. It's time to suspend negotiations and just get ready for a war because they knew it was coming after Operation Midnight Hammer. And so did Israel and America. And so for about 6 months after Operation Midnight Hammer, you had Iran frantically building up their ballistic and drone building, manufacturing, storage, and launching capabilities, while you had Israel and America attempting to foment rebellion inside Iran for the eventual overthrow there. And we know this is the case because even before the Operation Epstein's Fury broke out in February 28th of this year, you had U.S. Secretary of this U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent claiming responsibility for the uprisings that occurred in Iran. So we can go to 206 here on the Iran timeline. Here is Scott Bessent explaining that the, you know, rebellion, the protests and the riots that occurred in Iran, they weren't exactly naturally occurring. They were manufactured by us. Let's watch.
The Treasury and what we have done is created a dollar shortage in the country. At a speech at the Economic Club of New York in March, I outlined the strategy. It came to a swift and I would say grand culmination in December when one of the largest banks in Iran went under. There was a run on the bank. The central bank had to print money. The Iranian currency went into free fall, inflation exploded, and hence we have seen the Iranian people out on the street. We will continue monitoring all the partners, all the Iranian partners. The good news, Senator, is that we have seen, and we can see it with our fencing.
All right, so U.S. says it caused a dollar shortage to trigger Iran protests. What that means? Well, what it means is that when we then go and say, the Iranian people are so unhappy with their leadership, we must free them, it's completely dishonest because the reason they're unhappy is because of us. So we create the conditions to make them unhappy. And then Israel sends in a bunch of Mossad agents to try to get the protesters to commit violence, or just they just do commit violence against the state security, who then fires back. So then we can say, oh, look, they killed all their people. Now we have to go in to save their people. This is all games. This is all smoke and mirrors. But it's confirmed at this point. And this is why it's worth it to go, you know, back over the timeline, because at the time we could sit here and go, I don't think these riots are real. I think this is Mossad doing this. We could look at the Starlink, you know, things that were captured. We could look at, you know, some of the statements made by Iran that they were accusing them of that, but we didn't really know. But then a couple weeks later, you've got the New York Times and the Times of Israel all reporting things like this. Netanyahu is frustrated that Mossad's promise to instigate Iran uprising has fallen short. So now we can go back and go, okay, during those riots, during that supposed uprising, that was all manufactured. It was manufactured in one case by our economic warfare against them, which, by the way, Scott Bessent was brought in to do. He became an expert at this by working under the world-renowned expert in collapsing economies economically, George Soros. So he was a George Soros employee that was brought into the Treasury specifically to wage economic warfare against Iran to inspire the riots that could then be infiltrated by Mossad to cause the chaos that would lead us going to war. And this is all very sophisticated, but simple at the end of the day. It's not all that complicated. But now we could go back and say, okay, now we know for absolute certain that those riots, the protests, they were fake. They were manufactured. They were outside forces. They were foreign agitators going into Iran to cause the chaos that we could then take advantage of. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu embraced a Mossad plan to spark a popular uprising at the start of the Iran war and is frustrated that those promises have not come to pass, according to a new report. A report in the New York Times published Sunday, but this was back in March 23rd. Citing current and former U.S. and Israeli intelligence officials, says Netanyahu discussed the plan when persuading U.S. President Donald Trump to go to war against the Islamic Republic. And we'll get to that in just a second. But again, all throughout the chaotic time period, here's the New York Times story. Israel thought it could spur rebellion inside Iran. That hasn't happened. Okay. And they'll present this as if it's like, we wanted to help the poor downtrodden of Iran. And nah, darn it, it just didn't happen. No. They wanted to manufacture a color revolution in Iran to overthrow the Iranian government. These are outside forces infiltrating, subverting, and trying to destroy. Okay. Very different, you know, vibe than, oh my gosh, people of Iran want freedom, let's go help them, then we're starving the people of Iran. They're so angry that we're starving them that we're going to use that to kill a bunch of them to justify our invasion and overthrow of their government. Totally crazy. And when you get to the numbers that are claimed, that now it's 45,000. I don't know. It was 32,000 for a while. Now it's 45,000. Trump's like, maybe 60,000. I don't know. I can make up any number. They're all just completely manufactured. Okay. It just doesn't exist. They just came up with these numbers out of nowhere. I tried to find like where they actually came from, and they were literally just made up. Ayatollah Khomeini did acknowledge that several thousands of Iranians had been killed since protests started in late December among shopkeepers in downtown Tehran before gradually spreading to big and small cities. That confirmation is unusual because Khomeini typically avoids commenting on death tolls during previous protests in Iran over the years, but they did admit to something like 3,000 people dying as a consequence of this. But of course, if Mossad is there arming the protesters, it's kind of hard to, you know, see this as just, you know, the big bad tyrants mowing down peaceful protesters. They weren't. They were Mossad agents, or they were being tricked by Mossad agents into being the useful idiots of an overthrow. So it's like, what are you supposed to let them do that? I don't know. I don't know if Iran killed these people or if it was Mossad killing them to blame on Iran. I mean, it's acknowledged that Mossad was behind these riots. So that throws everything that we know about it into confusion and suspicion. But basically, they just made up numbers. The latest figures of the widely recited human rights activist news agency based in the U.S. says more than 3,300 deaths have been confirmed and over 4,300 are being investigated. So they say that the official number is 3,300. Meanwhile, somebody just decided to multiply that by 10 and claim that that was the actual number. So these numbers don't make sense. So again, this is all just the groundwork. This is the background, just knowing that the protests were a lie, the riots were a lie, the death tolls were a lie. All of this was a lie designed to convince you that we had to go to war with Iran. So then you get to about a week before the attack happens, about 2 weeks before, I should say. And again, this is why we're going back in time, because at the time we didn't know this was going on. We had suspicions and we could guess more or less that we'd be going to war in Iran. But now we have the actual detailed account of what occurred in the run-up for the 2 weeks before the actual assault on Iran. It, of course, is in a New York Times article called How Trump Took the U.S. to War with Iran. And it talks about Benjamin Netanyahu arriving at the White House just before 11 a.m. on February 11th. The Israeli leader, who'd been pressing for months, or you could say decades, for the U.S. to agree to a major assault in Iran, was whisked inside with little ceremony out of view of reporters, primed for one of the most high-stakes moments of his long career. It was just, it's just him versus the President of the United States. Who is going to win the face-off? And of course, it's Netanyahu. Basically, you had everybody involved in the war there. You had General Dan Cain. You had Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. You had Marco Rubio, Susie Wiles, the head of Mossad, and Benjamin Netanyahu. And of course, the way they describe it is Netanyahu's in the center, sort of at the head of the table, everybody surrounding him. Actually make a point that Trump did not sit in his usual seat at the head of the table, which is symbolic and probably more important than not. The only person that wasn't there at the time just so happened to be J.D. Vance. You think that was an accident? I don't believe you. J.D. Vance was in Azerbaijan, and the meeting had been scheduled on such short notice, he was unable to make it back in time, I'm sure. No, he was deliberately excluded because they knew he wouldn't be down with it, or because they wanted to insulate him from the effects of the war so that they could preserve his political career later. I'm open to either suggestion. In the Situation Room on February 11th, Mr. Netanyahu made a hard sell, suggesting that Iran was ripe for regime change and expressing the belief that a joint U.S.-Israeli mission could finally bring an end to the Islamic Republic. That, of course, was a lie. Mr. Netanyahu and his team outlined conditions they portrayed as pointing to near certain victory. Iran's ballistic missile program could be destroyed in a few weeks. The regime would be so weakened that it could not choke off the Strait of Hormuz, and the likelihood that Iran would land blows against U.S. interests in neighboring countries was addressed as minimal. Yeah. Yeah, what are they going to do? Bomb Qatar? It's never going to happen, right? What are they going to do? Bomb Saudi Arabia? They would never. Well, Mossad's intelligence indicated that street protests inside Iran would begin again. with the impotent. Yeah. Like, we think it's going to begin again as they load their guns. With the impetus of the Israeli spy agency helping to foment riots and rebellion, an intense bombing campaign could foster the conditions for the Iranian opposition to overthrow the regime. The Israelis also raised the prospect of Iranian Kurdish fighters crossing the border from Iraq to open the ground front in the northwest, further stretching the regime's forces and accelerating its collapse. But of course, they had no ability to actually bring that to fruition and talk to the Kurds about it at all. They're just lying. This is just a recitation of lies. Mr. Netanyahu's presentations and Mr. Trump's positive response to them created an urgent task for the U.S. intelligence community, and overnight, analysts worked to assess the viability of what the Israeli team had presented to the president. The U.S. officials assessed, the intelligence officials came back the next day with their assessment. They assessed that the first two objectives were achievable with American intelligence and military power. They assessed that third and fourth parts of Mr. Netanyahu's pitch, which included the possibility of the Kurds mounting a ground invasion of Iran. They said these were detached from reality. Basically, as four parts, it was the decapitation, killing the Ayatollah, crippling Iran's capacity to project power. Third is the uprising inside Iran, and fourth is regime change. So they're like, those first two we could do, but those second two are unachievable. They're impossible. They are, quote unquote, detached from reality. When Mr. Trump joined that meeting, Mr. Ratcliffe, head of the CIA, briefed him on the assessment with that the CIA director used one word to describe the Israeli prime minister's regime change scenario, quote unquote, farcical. At that point, Mr. Rubio cut in saying, in other words, it's bullshit. The president then turned to General Kane. General, what do you think? General Kane responded, sir, this is, in my experience, standard operating procedure for the Israelis. They oversell and their plans are not always well developed. They know they need us and that's why they're hard selling. Mr. Trump quickly weighed the assessment. Regime change, he said, would be, quote unquote, their problem. It was unclear whether he was referring to the Israelis or the Iranian people, but the bottom line was that his decision on whether to go to war against Iran or not would hinge on whether parts 3 and 4 of Mr. Netanyahu's presentation were achievable. He remained very interested in accomplishing parts 1 and 2, killing the Ayatollah and Iran's top leaders and dismantling the Iranian military. General Kane, the man who Trump likes to refer to as Raisin Kane, had impressed the president years earlier by telling him the Islamic State could be defeated far more quickly than others had projected. Mr. Trump rewarded that confidence by elevating the general, who'd been an Air Force pilot, to be his top military advisor. General Kane was not a political loyalist, and he had serious concerns about the war with Iran, but he was very cautious in the way he presented his views to the president. So this is back on February 11th and 12th. They basically make the decision to go to war. And so from that point until the 28th, you can assume that they are prepared to go to war. They are putting things in place and they are stringing the Iranians along, knowing that the agreement would never actually be finalized or achieved. And again, you can read all of the sordid details in this New York Times article. And of course, a lot of the, take it with a grain of salt if you want. It is the New York Times. And I have the feeling that as this becomes more and more of a political liability, you are going to see more and more people in the Trump administration claiming, I was against this the whole time, as we see in the New York Times article. Oh, I told him it was BS early on. But not with enough force or, you know, motive to actually stop it from happening. So, from the 12th to the 28th, you have the ongoing Iranian talks. And they've been going on for a while, but of course, they were reaching a climax of one sort or the other. And we were basically told that because the talks had failed, that's why we had to go attack Iran. We didn't believe them, or they weren't giving us anything. Basically, we tried and we got to the end of our diplomatic rope, and so we had to attack. But later, it was revealed that there were British attachés as a part of the negotiations that were there and revealed that Iran actually was willing to give Trump everything he wanted, more or less. Everything that we have now failed to achieve through over a month of war. Things like no longer enriching uranium, or at least promising not to try to make a bomb with it. All sorts of stuff that we claimed we couldn't get. They were untrustworthy. They were intractable. We had to go to war with them to stop their developing their enrichment of uranium, but we could have done that diplomatically. The offer was on the table, but we decided 3 weeks before that war would be the answer. So let's go now to clip 227 here. So this was David Rode posted this, the British attaché, talking about how Iran was willing to give up all of its enriched uranium, which was, is the goal of all of this, apparently. And that's the one persistent goal that's been, you know, talked about by the Trump administration. We have to stop the uranium. They cannot get a bomb. But we could have achieved that 40 days ago with a signature on a piece of paper and a shaking of hands. We went a different direction. That hasn't worked and only made things worse. Here's the British attaché talking about what Iran had on the table when we decided to attack.
Iran offered to give away all of its enriched uranium during the peace talks. And hours later, the U.S. started dropping bombs. And The Guardian broke yesterday that there were British officials, the British National Security Advisor was present in Geneva during that last round of talks. The British were surprised by the Iranian offer. They thought it was credible. They thought the talks could should continue. And the British were shocked when the Trump administration started bombing Iran hours later.
Okay, so this whole war was unnecessary. So the ultimate goal of the war that they keep telling us was right there, sitting on the table, ready to be grasped. We chose war instead. So now that goal that was imminently available to us is now farther than it ever has been before as a consequence of this utterly ill-advised and stupid war. Here's Trump making the war announcement on the 28th of February. This is how we learned that we were now in war with Iran. Let's watch.
A short time ago, the United States military began major combat operations in Iran. Our objective is to defend the American people by eliminating imminent threats from the Iranian regime, a vicious group of very hard, terrible people. I'll say it again. They can never have a nuclear weapon. For these reasons, the United States military is undertaking a massive and ongoing operation to prevent this very wicked, radical dictatorship from threatening America and our core national security interests. We are going to destroy their missiles and raise their missile industry to the ground. It will be totally, again, obliterated. We're going to annihilate their navy. We're going to ensure that the region's terrorist proxies can no longer destabilize the region or the world. This regime will soon learn that no one should challenge the strength and might of the United States Armed Forces. The lives of courageous American heroes may be lost, and we may have casualties. That often happens in war. Finally, to the great, proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. Stay sheltered. Don't leave your home. It's very dangerous outside. Bombs will be dropping everywhere. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take. This will be probably your only chance for generations. For many years, you have asked for America's help, but you never got it. No president was willing to do what I am willing to do tonight.
So that's Trump announcing it on February 28th. He, of course, had decided on this course of action about 2 or 3 weeks beforehand. And despite the willingness of Iran to meet us in the middle on negotiations and end this in a peaceful and diplomatic way, Trump, with the urging and assurance of Netanyahu against the advice of his entire cabinet, decided to go to war anyway. So we'll pick it up there. We've laid the groundwork now, and now we'll pick up on February 28th and how things went off the rails from there. And so far, I'm keeping track. So far, we've heard that this war is about defending the American people, Iran never getting a nuke, and freeing the Iranian people. How long will these three goals last?
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us.
Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades, so they have major studies, but now, here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document the potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation. Total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our ultra methylene blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Allow me to make a prediction here in my prediction stuff. I'm not Polly Market, I'm not Kalshi, but I'm pretty good at predictions. And my prediction here is that everything that the media is now going to say about Iran's going to close the Strait of Hormuz and energy prices are going to go crazy and all these, none of this is going to come to pass. That isn't to say there won't be a little bumps here and there in the market, and it's not to say one random thing, you know, bad thing might happen to a ship or something like that. But Iran has basically, their military has basically been decimated. So they can keep doing PR stunts and having the second general of the fourth command of the third wing of the Iranian army show up on MSNBC. They can keep doing that and make his threats and say, we're going to let things through if we like you and not if we don't. But it just is utterly irrelevant. We are the sheriff.
Yeah, how'd that work out? How'd that prediction work out for you? It's funny. It's It's very funny. I mean, that was a couple of days after the war had started. And, of course, he's saying that Iran is already done. They've been defeated, and they'll never close the Strait of Hormuz. That wasn't my prediction. My prediction was the exact opposite, and it was the right one. So this is why we're going back. This is why we're going back over the timeline to show you all of the lies that you've been fed that we now know are absolute lies, incontrovertibly. So, again, to refresh, we put economic sanctions on Iran that are designed to cause pain in the civilian population. Israel sends Mossad agents in to inspire riots and protest and to arm the rioters and protesters and attempt to overthrow the government. There's clashes. People end up dead. They multiply the number of dead by 10 to claim that that's the reason that we're going after Iran. Although in the beginning, as we just heard from Trump, and that was a shortened Trump statement that I edited. Obviously, you could probably see the jumps, but his full statement was about 8 minutes, and I included all of the actual reasons for the war in there, which, according to Trump, are to protect Americans from Iranian attack, to ensure that Iran never achieves a nuclear weapon, and to free the Iranian people who are begging for us to come deliver democracy to them. Now, we know all of that's untrue, and in fact, we could have gotten the enriched uranium through diplomacy. They were ready and willing to negotiate with us, but we weren't interested in negotiation. The negotiation was all a big ruse to keep them in a state of a false sense of security so that we could kill all of their leadership. And so on February 28th, we did just that. And for everybody watching and at the time, and this is what we said, and looking back, I'm only more and more sure that this is correct, that Donald Trump expected it to be Venezuela 2.0. He expected, he believed the Israelis, and when Benjamin Netanyahu, when he told them, despite all of his intelligence agencies saying that it was farcical, far-fetched, and BS, he believed him. And he thought that they'd bomb him on Friday, and by Monday, before the markets even open, he'd be out there going, we did it. We destroyed the Iranian regime. A new regime is in place. And done deal. Now, this may have been complicated, and it's a little confusing. This is one that's not fully confirmed, but it appears as though there were people that we expected to be able to slot in to basically take over once we killed the, higher ups. And it looks like Israel may have killed them at the same time, leaving us holding the bag on Monday morning, leaving Donald Trump standing there going, don't worry, it's going to be like 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks. We planned for this. It's going better than we thought. Now, I don't believe any of that. But it was on the 3rd of March that we sort of first got the real story about what happened. Again, they expected it. I really genuinely think they expected it to be over by that Monday. It would have been the 1st of March, right? Or the 2nd of March. Monday was the 2nd of March. So you expected by the 2nd of March for it to be over. And this is where you see the first example of failure to prepare and scrambling to make up for failure. So they expected this to be a in and out miracle worker type Venezuela operation. And when that didn't work, they immediately go to the Kurds. Now, previously, apparently Netanyahu had said that the Kurds would be ready for this, but clearly they had not communicated with the Kurds. And the Kurds basically turned around and slapped their offer right down and said, hell no, we're not going to fight for you. Screw you. We're going to fight against you, if anything. So again, you see this over and over where it's this big mission, big attempt. It's going to be amazing. We're going to decapitate them, put a new person on the throne, and then we'll be done. When that doesn't work, they're looking around going, okay, the Kurds. Oh, well, the Kurds are going to come fight us. They're going to be our boots on the ground. And when that doesn't work out, they come out with the threats again. And when those don't work, they go to the next, attempt to pull something off. It hasn't worked yet. And all of this, again, is indicative of the fact that they were not prepared for any of this. They were not prepared for a 4 week war. They were not prepared for a 6 week war. They thought this would be over in a weekend. And when it wasn't, everything went downhill. And it's been just trying desperately to manage and hide the chaos ever since. And you know that this wasn't a unified and cohesive action, because on the 3rd of March is when you had Marco Rubio and others admitting that this was all for the sake of Iran. For the sake of Israel, rather. Now, we already know that Israel promised Trump that this would be successful. Israel was pushing for this. Israel was the one starting the riots and encouraging, you know, all of this, and also committing genocide in Gaza, which is causing the fight in the first place. And so it wasn't exactly a surprise that this was happening. It was shocking to hear somebody in the government actually admit that this is the way things went. Let's go to that classic video that will live in infamy, since it was Marco Rubio, Secretary of State of the United States, accidentally telling us the truth. 303, this is Marco Rubio.
The United States conducted this operation with a very clear goal in mind. I haven't got a chance to see a lot of reporting. I don't understand what the confusion is. Let me explain it to you, and I'll do it once again as clearly as possible. Perhaps you'll report it that way. The United States is conducting an operation to eliminate the threat of Iran's short-range ballistic missiles and the threat posed by their Navy, particularly to naval assets. That is what it is focused on doing right now, and it's doing quite successfully. I'll leave it to the Pentagon and the Department of War to discuss the tactics behind that and the progress that's being made. That is the clear objective of this mission. The second question that's been asked is, why now? Well, there's two reasons why now. The first is it was abundantly clear that if Iran came under attack by anyone, the United States or Israel or anyone, they were going to respond and respond against the United States. The orders had been delegated down to the field commanders. It was automatic, and in fact, it bears to be true, because in fact, within an hour of the initial attack on the leadership compound, the missile forces in the south and in the north, for that matter, had already been activated to launch. In fact, those had already been pre-positioned. The third is the assessment that was made that if we stood and waited for that attack to come first before we hit them, we would suffer much higher casualties. And so the president made the very wise decision. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties and perhaps even higher those killed. And then we would all be here answering questions about why we knew that and didn't act.
All right, so there you go. Rubio suggests U.S. strikes on Iran were influenced by Israeli plans. In other words, we were forced into it because Israel was going to attack Iran. We would receive the backlash. Instead of trying to restrain Israel, we decided to go all in. Now, of course, they tried to walk this back, but not before confirming it multiple times. Of course, Trump tried to go the opposite direction. We, of course, now know that, you know, this is not true. It was, in fact, Israel that, you know, was going to launch the attack and forced our hand. But, you know, Israel's never had a better friend than Trump. And here he is, claiming to have forced Israel's hand, taking the blame for this utterly devastating war. Let's go to the next clip here.
Mr. President, did Israel force your hand to launch these strikes against Iran? Did that involve the whole United States into this war?
No, I might have forced their hand. You see, we were having negotiations with these lunatics, and it was my opinion that they were going to attack first. They were going to attack if we didn't do it. They were going to attack first. I felt strongly about that. And we have great negotiators, great people, people that do this very successfully and have done it all their lives very successful. And based on the way the negotiation was going, I think they were going to attack first. And I didn't want that to happen. So if anything, I might have forced Israel's hand.
Okay, so at the time that this video came out, you may have believed that. You may have thought that that was true. We know now none of that was true. We know he decided on February 12th that these negotiations would never be concluded. He had no reason to believe, oh, because of these negotiations, Iran is going to attack us. Iran was giving them everything they wanted, but they decided 3 weeks earlier to go to war. J.D. Vance, vice president, came out trying to, you know, put a good face on this and say, no, we didn't expect this to be over already. We expect this to last for a while. Let's go to J.D. Vance again on the 3rd of March.
The United States has a lot of optionality here. And, you know, we could go for a little bit longer. We could go for a lot longer. But I think the president just wants to make it clear to the Iranians and to the world that he is not going to rest until he accomplishes that all-important objective of ensuring that Iran can't have a nuclear weapon, not just for the next few years, not just because we obliterated Fordow or some other enrichment facility, but because the Iranians themselves commit long-term to not building a nuclear weapon.
So there was Operation Epic Fury in full swing. So J.D. Vance, again, doubles down on the idea that this is all about stopping Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. But if you go back to that Rubio clip, he introduced two other goals that haven't been mentioned up to that point, which was destroying their ballistic missile capability and their Navy. Okay, so that makes five total goals so far, which is defending the American people from attack, never letting Iran have a nuke, freeing the Iranian people from the despots who control them, destroying their ballistic missiles, and destroying their navy. Now, they may have come up with these two last goals after realizing the other goals are unachievable and knowing that they already pretty much did the last two. So maybe that's how it worked. But again, it wasn't just Marco Rubio and everybody else saying that this was Israel doing it, which is anti-Semitic, by the way. I don't know if you know this. According to the Times of Israel, saying that Israel dragged the U.S. To war isn't just wrong. It's anti-Semitic, according to Shlomo Levin, who must be Mark Levin's alter ego or something. I don't know. His real name, we're not sure. But yeah, it's anti-Semitic, apparently, to understand the process by which we were driven to war by the despicable Jewish state of Israel. Let's go to clip the next one now, 304. This is Mike Johnson, again, admitting, saying, revealing, slipping. I don't know what you want to say, but confirming, once again, this was for Israel. Let's watch.
To me, the most critical point is that this was a defensive measure, a defensive operation. And why is that? I took some notes, and this is not classified, so I'll tell you what I think is important. Israel was determined to act in their own defense here, with or without American support. Why? Because Israel faced what they deemed to be an existential threat. Iran was building missiles at a radical rapid clip to the point where our allies in the region could not keep up. As you know, Iran has long vowed to take out Israel, wipe it off the map, and they have long seen that.
Yeah, so we get it. It was about Israel. I mean, it was about Israel. It was about Israel. It was about Israel. Everybody knows. I'm just letting you know in case you got people out there. Israel's not dragging us into this. Literally everybody said it. You just don't have a memory that goes back a month, I guess. And it was on the 6th of March that Donald Trump, I don't know what's motivating this, but came up with a new end to the war, came up with a new goal that we were trying to achieve, a new military objective that would define our operation there. Unlike any of the others, let's go to clip 306 here. Trump saying what he demands from Iran to end the war. Let's watch.
Simple words, a very simple, unconditional surrender. That means I've had it. Okay, I've had it. I give up. No more. Then we go blow up all the, all the nuclear stuff that's all over the place there.
Unconditional surrender. We're a pretty far away from that. But as of March 6th, that was the demand. Unconditional surrender. Okay? Just letting you know that the ever-shifting goals that were put forward by our leadership. We go to the next clip here. Because, again, this is Trump, even though previously said he forced Israel's hand. Kind of not the truth. Let's watch.
All of this money is to make sure they never go nuclear, they can't hit us with ballistic missiles, and they stop terrorizing the region. When this regime goes down, we're going to have a new Mideast. We're going to make a ton of money. Nobody will threaten the Straits of Hormuz again.
We're going to make so much money, you guys. The money's going to come rolling in. Of course, now here we are a month and more later, and the Strait of Hormuz is closed with no sign of it opening. We can go to the next one. Here's Trump again, letting it slip a little bit.
Years they've been killing our people and killing people from all over the world, and I think we have great support. And I think if we didn't do it first, they would have done it to Israel and give us a shot if that was possible.
Give us a shot if that was possible. So again, he's like, well, they were going to attack Israel, so we did it first. So it's just over and over again. It's been reconfirmed continuously. This was for Israel. So speeding up here, just to try to get to the end, because we're still very much early on. But as of February 28th, U.S. and Israel forces launched nearly 500 strikes in the first 12 hours. Iranian missile and air defense sites, command centers, nuclear-related facilities, et cetera, et cetera. Civilian casualties included 170 to 180 killed when a missile hit a girls' school in Manab. Additional strikes hit other places, including some of the nuclear sites, as well as residential halls and a residential zones and a sports hall. Then Iran retaliated, launching 170 ballistic missiles, thousands of drones at Israel, U.S. bases and the Gulf states. Strikes damaged airports, ports, hotels, and refineries. Debris and intercepts caused additional casualties. Iran effectively began disrupting the Strait of Hormuz basically that day. Israel then called up its reservists. You had cyber attacks on Iranian infrastructure, and a state of emergency was declared in Israel and the Gulf states. Then for the first few weeks of the conflict, you basically have back and forth escalation continuing with heavy U.S. and Israeli strikes targeting air bases, hospitals, command centers, and Natanz nuclear facility, with Iranian retaliating across the region. Civilian deaths mount. Interim Iranian leadership, a council was formed with Mujtaba Khamenei, later elected supreme leader on March 8th. And it continued. We can go skip down now to 3:10. This was on the 10th of March, where Trump was certain that we'd already won the war and we were just going to wrap it up pretty soon now. Let's watch.
Thank you, Mr. President. On Iran, you called it an excursion. You said it would be over soon. Are you thinking this week it will be over?
No,
are you talking
but soon.
About days?
I think soon.
Okay, and with respect
very
to...
Very soon.
We can go to the next one here. 2 days later, he reiterated, it's not only over soon, it actually ended the first day. Let's watch.
Well, it's only good if you win. You know, you can only... And we've won. Let me say, we've won. You know, you never like to say too early you won. We won. We won the bet. In the first hour, it was over.
Yeah, kind of. But, you know, that was a month ago at this point, and here we are in a worse position than ever. We can go to 313 here. This is Secretary of War Pete Hegseth saying that no need to worry. The Strait of Hormuz will be opened by America in no time. Just calm down. Let's watch.
And as the world is seeing, they are exercising sheer desperation in the Straits of Hormuz. Something we're dealing with. We have been dealing with it, and don't need to worry about it.
Don't need to worry about it. You don't need to worry about it at all. You don't need to worry about it so much that it's not even really close. The Strait, it's not close. Let's go to the next with Pete Hegseth here, 313. Pete Hegseth says that the Strait of Hormuz is actually open, you guys. Let's watch.
The only thing prohibiting transit in the Straits right now is Iran shooting at shipping. It is open for transit should Iran not do that.
Got it. Got it. So the Strait is open. You just might be hit with a missile if you go through. Totally makes sense. Again, are you getting a picture of just like the chaos, the lack of direction, the flip-flopping, the completely unachievable goals that then have to be replaced by goals that shouldn't even exist because the Strait of Hormuz was open before we started this conflict? Are you understanding the stupidity that we have been led down? And everybody who has listened to these lies and believe this crap is responsible for the fact that we are now, at this point, pretty much losing a war against Iran. Then you got a pretty big deal here, probably the biggest deal of the entire conflict, 3:19, a few days before, around the 16th or 17th of March, Joe Kent, the head of the National Counterterror Center, resigned in protest of the Iran war. The next day, he went on Tucker Carlson and said this about who controls our foreign policy. Let's watch.
And I think this speaks to the broader issue. Who is in charge of our policy in the Middle East? Who is in charge of when we decide to go to war or not? In this case, with what the secretary described and later on the president, later on the Speaker of the House, and the way the events played out, the Israelis drove the decision to take this action, which we knew would set off a series of events, meaning the Iranians would retaliate.
Again, we knew. We knew this would not go well. We knew Iran was lying. Israel was lying to us about how easy this would be. We knew that the Strait of Hormuz would be closed, even if Dave Rubin was lying to you about it. We knew. Everybody knew. But Joe Kent asked a very important question there. He asked, who controls our foreign policy? Well, clearly Israel does, from everything that we've seen so far. But the real question is, why? For what? Why are they getting us into war in Iran? Why did they want to start the riots? Why did they use the American treasury to create the conditions to overthrow the Iranian government? Of course, you don't have to wonder because Benjamin Netanyahu has told you over and over. Here's a speech from the 13th of March where he lays out why America got into war in Iran.
We are in historic days, days that will be written in the annals of Israel. In Operation Roaring Lion, our war is going and intensifying. We are pummeling the Islamic regime in Tehran. We are pummeling its emissaries, Hezbollah in Lebanon. There's unprecedented coordination between Israel and the U.S. and achieved substantial achievements that are changing the reality in the West Bank, in the Middle East and beyond. These achievements are increasing the status of Israel as a superpower more than ever. Through our power and as in opposition to the power of our enemies, this is what is ensuring our survival. Our threats come and go, but when we become a regional superpower, and in many respects a global superpower, we have the power to push away threats and ensure our future. In 1993, I published an article in one of the newspapers in which I wrote, the biggest threat to the state of Israel is not in Arab states, but it is in Iran. Since then,
all right, so that's why it's so Israel can become a superpower on the world stage, a regional power uncontested in the Middle East, and a superpower the equivalent of China or America as they seek to supplant America by using us to go to war with Iran. That's what all of this has been about. So again, they lied to us to get us into this. They used us to create the conditions to fool Trump into thinking that this was possible. When it turned out it wasn't possible, we've been now drawn into a quagmire that, according to Benjamin Netanyahu himself, is all in service of building up Israel as a regional superpower. It's not anything to do with benefits for the American people. And so for the entire month of March, it's just a continual back and forth, you know, game of battleship with missiles flying from Iran to Israel. Then you get to the last week of March. The last week of March is when I think out of sheer desperation and, you know, an unwillingness to admit they were wrong and back off, I believe they attempted to launch a ground invasion, a miniaturized ground invasion to seize the uranium stockpile. That completely failed. You had the story about the fallen pilot and the rescue mission. And immediately after that, you have Trump issue the threat to totally obliterate the entire civilization unless they open the Strait of Hormuz. They refuse to open the Strait of Hormuz. Trump backs down anyway, agrees to this 10-point peace plan that they don't actually agree to. Israel immediately breaks it by bombing Lebanon, and now here we are, straight closed, billions of dollars spent, dozens of people dead, entire bases obliterated, Iran more extreme, less inclined to participate in any sort of oversight of their nuclear program. Absolutely everything has gotten worse, and the fault can be laid firmly at the feet of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and Donald Trump himself, for falling for their lies, as well as, of course, all of the quislings and sycophants online that believe all of the lies and, you know, try to discredit you for disbelieving them. And so I believe that all of this, I mean, it's been this continual process of making these big claims, trying some major this will end the war adventure that fails, rinse and repeat. I don't know how we get out of this, but one thing is certain. We have to decouple from Israel. We have to restrain Israel. And if we really want peace in the world, we have to destroy Israel. We have to arrest the leadership, convict them in war crime tribunals, dissolve the state, and establish a multi-faith republic. That needs to be the future of Israel. Shouldn't exist.
In a world where globalists, depopulationists, principalities, and powers of the air have been adding, spraying, and inundating humans with heavy metals, chemicals, and toxins, TheAlexJonesStore.com would like to introduce a new way to remove them from your body from the inside out. Introducing Zeolite. Zeolites are a group of crystal-like porous minerals that are found where molten stone meets water. From the Greek zeo, to boil, and lithos, or light, meaning stone, this unique network of tiny little holes and channels found in zeolite absorb and remove harmful substances like heavy metals, chemicals, and other toxins. So don't delay. Start the process of removing unwanted toxins from your body and put some skin in the game of the InfoWar today by going to thealexjonesstore.com and picking up a bottle of Zeolite.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fights will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.